What is going on, everybody? Welcome back to the Blindsided Podcast, hosted by yours truly, the Benchwarmers. Wow, it has been a long time since we've gotten to talk to you guys. It's been a long time since you've got to hear from Colton in general. I think since our fantasy football draft when we did that episode, been gone far too long. I've missed doing the show. I'm sure Colton has too. Colton out here working hard, chasing dreams, and then life in general. We both just got really busy. But finally, it seems like we're going to be able to get things back up and running and bring things to you just in the nick of time because, man, do we have a lot of things going on right now around the sports world. But first, before we get started on that, Colton, how have you been? How's life been treating you? I know you're out there chasing the dreams. You had your first, this was your first year on the sidelines helping out college or high school football coaching, all that stuff. How'd that go? What was it like?
I mean, man, life's been crazy, just a complete roller coaster. I'm working as a computer teacher over in Harrah, Oklahoma right now. So I'm doing that kind of during the morning, and then I got a second job that, you know, it is what it is. You got to do what you can to pay the bills. But, yeah, first time helping out on the sideline for high school football. It was an amazing experience and hoping to get to do that again next season. So we'll see kind of in the next coming months if I'm going to be able to do that and kind of where I'm going to be next year. So big plans coming, but also it's been quite the roller coaster since the last time you've gotten to hear my voice on this podcast.
It's been far too long, but we are back. With that being said, you know, college football, we didn't really get to do a lot of college football this year. You know, we both got busy. We didn't get to really talk about it a whole lot. Now the season's over. I think we got to do a preseason, a little bit of college football, and that was about it. But the season's over. It's finally come to an end. Michigan national championship, 34-13 ended up being the final in the championship game, was just absolutely dominant. Won it off a stout run game, a hell of a defense. And I know there's a lot of people out there that are angry, feel like Michigan cheated, and say what you want about them. But, man, they had a hell of a team, and they played everybody really tough all year. And, I mean, they dominated damn near everybody they played. I think they deserved to win the title.
I mean, yeah, it was a great playoff in general. I mean, you had all the controversy of Florida State not getting in and whether they deserved to be in or not. But it's like, even though they may have deserved to get in, it was still an incredible playoff of Michigan versus Bama, what a game that one turned out to be. And then I hate Texas, but, you know, them versus Washington was an outstanding game, came down to the very last play, you know, tipped away a pass from Washington to get into the Natty. And then, you know, it wasn't close in the end, but it was still just a heck of a game to get to watch and be a part of. Felt like it was going to get away from Washington, and then they kept it close before half, and, you know, just kind of went away from them again in the second half. And yeah, it is what it is.
The wheels just kind of fell off there for them.
Yeah, I mean, you could tell Penix was just getting up. He was hurt every single play, and it's like, you know, your human body can only withstand so many hits like that. So, you know, if Washington's going to, you know, get back here next year, I think they really need to try to beef up that offensive line, whether in the portal or in high school recruiting or, you know, whatever the case might be. But you can't – whatever quarterback goes behind center next year for them, you can't be having that.
Well, I think it's great that you actually brought up Washington getting back there at that next point. Next season being the first season that they're in the Big Ten. Those are obviously all new obstacles for them. Michigan, who already asserted their dominance over them once. Then you're going to have Ohio State, Penn State, you know, the traditional powers that be in the Big Ten. A whole new breed of football that's played out there. Travel in itself, I think, can really take a toll on them. Oregon's going to be solid next year, and maybe they can get those two losses back from them. But more importantly, Michael Penix is gone, going to the NFL, second in the Heisman this year. Had a great season, just a hell of a quarterback, a great talent in college, guy that played a lot of football, had a lot of leadership qualities. And then more importantly, their coach today is gone, and he is on his way to Alabama. So it seems like any chance that they might have had at the end of that game is all but gone out the window.
Yeah, it's going to be a tough stretch for them. I mean, they, like you said, they lose Penix. They're going to lose Rome Odunze, going to the NFL draft, adding to that already stacked wide receiver class we're going to see going into the NFL. They're going to lose Braylon Trice, one of my favorite edges, going into the draft as well. And then, you know, who else knows, you know, how many other players are either transferring out or leaving. There's definitely been a couple that I've seen today transfer out or re-enter the transfer portal, as we talked about before we started recording, since Kalen took over that Bama job.
Which, I mean, I think came as an absolute surprise to the football world as a whole, not just college football. I don't think any of us really saw Nick Saban stepping down after this year. By his standards, even though Bama made the playoffs, this didn't feel like a traditional powerful Alabama team. But that being said, the fact that they were still able to make the playoff, I think, showed a lot of promise for a young team. They were young. They were undisciplined this year. And I think those were things that I think everybody expected Saban to have ironed out and ready to go next year and ready to look like world leaders again. And for whatever reason it is, he decided he's done. I mean, he has nothing left to prove. He's done everything there is to do in college football. There's never been anybody that's done it better than him. Seven national championships speaks for itself. 6 and 17 years at Alabama is just ridiculous. Personally, I'm glad to see him go, just from the standpoint of I'm ready to see somebody else get a turn now. But yeah. for the game as a whole, it is a huge loss.
Yeah, I mean, it surprised everyone, but at the same time, it was just so on brand of a move for Nick Saban. Doesn't really get a whole lot into his personal life. Keeps it hard nosed down to the down to the game of football, and that's one of the million reasons why I respect him. But so it was just very on brand for a move that just kind of came out of nowhere for Saban. And you know, like you said, he had a 17-year career at Bama, but he was at LSU before that, and then he was coaching in the NFL with the Browns.
Well, I think going all
he was
the
head coach, but
well, going all the way back to when he first started coaching, I think his career spanned, looks like 48, 49 years. Yeah, so, I mean, that is a long time to be doing something.
Yeah, it's a very incredible full career of coaching mm-hmm. that he's been able to have. And, you know, he's one of the greatest for a reason.
Oh, yeah, I mean, we already said the 6 titles in 17 years. That's one basically every 3 years. 44 first-round draft picks, only 29 losses at Bama. I mean, his accolades – we don't have all the – I mean, we do have the time, but we're not going to read them all. You know the name. You know what he's done.
Yeah.
He'll be missed in Tuscaloosa very heavily. It's going to be interesting to see what that Alabama program becomes now that he is gone, because before Saban got there, they had kind of faded into obscurity. They weren't the traditional powerhouse that Bama had been back when they had Bear Bryant, and even in years after that, they'd kind of fallen off the map. They were not a powerhouse. Nick Saban got there, and he turned that team around big time. I think bringing in Kalen from Washington is a good hire, a solid coach. We saw what he did with Washington this year, and I don't think anybody had Washington going to the national championship game, but he got him there. He's got a lot of wins at a Division II, or was it NAIA level? I can't remember, on lower levels. He's won a lot of games. He's coached a lot of teams. He's got a lot of experience. But – I'm curious if you think that's going to transition over to Tuscaloosa. I mean, he's not Nick Saban. I don't think anybody is the recruiter Nick Saban is. Maybe Kirby Smart is a close second, but I don't know if he's going to bring in that same talent that Bama has had in years past. It's going to be interesting to see how many of these guys choose to enter the transfer portal and find their ways to other teams now that Saban's gone.
So it was NAIA. It was the University of Sioux Falls.
Okay.
But he is only 49, and he is bringing some, you know, he is a good coach. And so, you know, Alabama and Alabama fans are going to have to accept the reality that you're, you know, going into a little bit of a rebuild. Obviously, losing one of the greatest coaches ever. And you're going to have a lot of players transfer out because they all, you know, went with the expectation they're going to play for Saban.
Right.
And so you're going to have to deal with a lot of, you know, transfer portal players and, you know, stuff like that. And so it's going to be a little bit of a process, especially still playing in the SEC and what a great conference that is and going to be. And so, you know, I think he's a great coach for this rebuilding time. You know, I don't know if he'll be there, the guy that's going to lead him to the promised land. I would love for him to be successful there at Alabama. But I think he's a great coach to help lead them and have that leadership quality that's going to help lead them through this time.
So I want to know your initial knee-jerk reaction right now. Today, that hire was made official. What is your reaction? Can he sustain what Nick Saban has built, or do they fall off? I mean, I think we both agree he's a good coach, But is he going to relate to the players? Are players going to want to play for him like they did Saban?
There's going to be a fall off because you have to have, like, you can't just have players like, yeah, we're going to buy in. Like, you have to prove to them that you are still going to be a good coach and, like, Bama's still going to be a great program. Like, you have to prove that. You can't just, you know, say it in the offseason. You got to prove it. And so there is going to be a fall off. And I don't even know if they're going to be one of the top 12 teams next year. We'll see. You know, there's, you know, is the playoffs expanding? There's always a possibility. We'll kind of see, you know, what occurs. But, you know, there's going to be a fall off for sure.
Yeah, and I mean, right now, as for Alabama fans, I mean, this time sucks. I mean, this was us OU fans, what, just 2-3 years ago when Lincoln just decided to up and leave. But this is on a whole bigger scale because of all the championships Saban brought there. I mean, this is a whole uncertainty they haven't had to face in 18 years now. I mean, they were pretty settled in and used to being one of the best teams in the country, and they were pretty used to fighting for the playoffs every year. So, I mean, I'm very interested to see what happens. This definitely shakes up college football in a way that I don't think it's been shaken up in a long time. And this is an interesting time for it to be shaken up with the conference realignments we have going on. Obviously, Texas and Oklahoma to the big to the SEC, I'm sorry. The Big 12 gaining all the Pac-12 teams that they did, and then the Big 10 gaining Washington, Oregon, and the other teams they gained, and then the expansion of the playoff as well. Do you think all of that has anything to do with the timing of Nick Saban stepping away, or do you think he just woke up one morning and just said, I don't have anything left to prove, and I just want to enjoy my time with my family, and just I'm content?
At first, I definitely thought the years of, you know, 49 years total of coaching in general definitely has something to do with it. And, you know, given his age, and I think he's in the 70s now. But after kind of hearing some of his interviews, it really thinks that I really think that NIL played a lot in what kind of ran him away from, you know, being no longer a coach and, you know, stepping away from the college game. So
that's a good point. I didn't even bring up NIL. And that's something I definitely want us to talk about a little more here in a few minutes. But on the topic of coaching changes, obviously Saban was the biggest one. I think that kind of overshadows any other coaching changes that get made in college football, either before him or going forward the rest of the season. But one that I think we both can speak on, OU going into the SEC, they bring in new defense coordinator. Ted Roof is gone, which I have no problem with. The defense is vastly improved from when Alex Grinch was there, but you can tell it's still not where it needs to be. And if Venables feels like Roof can't lead him to the SEC, then it was time for him to go. And then more importantly, Jeff Lebby, a guy I really had a lot of disdain for that I did not like. I hated his play calling, and I felt like he was the guy that was given the playbook. He had Art Briles playbook. He has a combination of that and hell, who else? Lane Kiffin and all these guys that had this shiny playbook that put explosive plays on the board, put up big numbers, all this stuff. He has it. That's like getting the keys to a shiny new Corvette and not know how to drive it. And that's what he has. I think he was fortunate to be around other good coaches, and his play calling just never made sense in the 2 years he was at Oklahoma. Mississippi State fans are going to be very, very pissed off over the next few years that they had to deal with him. They'll see a lot of what we had to see and what we had to deal with. I don't think it's a great hire for them. That is a really bad hire. The SEC, his first head coaching job should not have been in the SEC. It should have been in a conference like Conference USA or the MAC or something like that. That's about the level of his coaching capabilities, in my opinion. But, you know, like I said, a lot of disdain for the guy. I do not like Lebby. I won't miss him. I'm glad he's gone. I'm also glad Dylan Gabriel's gone, a guy with an average arm who I think also made bad decisions. And I'm glad to see both of them gone, hoping this can help bring some more life into our university. We saw us take a huge step forward this year, 10 wins. We looked a whole heck of a lot better than we did last year. We still lost some games we shouldn't have and looked bad in spots, but we have momentum to build off of. And I think those two guys leaving, as odd as it sounds, your starting quarterback and your offensive coordinator, those guys leaving are going to help build on that momentum we have going forward.
Yeah. I mean, it kind of felt like a weird time to lose those two. I mean, I hated them too, but like going into a new conference, I didn't hate Gabriel. I hated Jeff Lebby anyway. But like you said, it was definitely needed. And then hiring Seth Luttrell and adding in a co-OC of Joe John Finley, like those are two guys that the players absolutely love. And you're bringing in that continuity. Like there was a couple of like, you know, shiny new OCs that I was kind of like thinking about wanting to go for. There was a OC from UNLV. He's got some incredible numbers, absolutely loves to run the ball. And, you know, Jeff Levy is allergic to running the ball with running backs. And so, you know, it just kind of felt like it was a great hire because we're going to have some great running backs come in. And we already had some great running backs leave because of the direction that our season went. And so I definitely was wanting him, but like, I love the hire of Seth Luttrell, and, you know, just keeping that continuity, especially going into, a new conference. Another aspect that I'm so happy that we are losing almost everyone at is the offensive line.
Yes.
We've talked about this on game day so many times. I absolutely hate them. They can open up holes for the run game, but they become a revolving door during, you know, pass blocking. And I hate it so very much.
They were very inconsistent.
I think Dylan Gabriel wouldn't have made as many mistakes had he had time to do, you know, to do anything. Jackson Arnold in the bowl game, he had time, but he was, you know, first year quarterback who, you know, got scared and may try to do too much. But so they did good in the bowl game in terms of blocking him until the very end. During the season, they were a revolving door, and Dylan didn't have enough time on some plays, and that's what forced some turnovers. And it's like, I hate it so much. I wanted to take the entire offensive line and make them all do up downs until everyone was throwing up.
Yeah,
and that's like, that's the only thing I wanted to do in that moment.
Yeah, they were wildly inconsistent, to say the least. The guys that we've had transfer out, it's no big loss in my opinion. I know a lot of casual fans like to fret on guys entering the transfer portal and being gone. But if you really watch this game and you watch this without bias and with an objective standpoint, watch this game for what it is in football and watch them play, you could see that these guys, they just didn't have it. Hopefully Bill Beedenbo can get them right. They definitely had a lot of issues. I think the reason they look so much better is Arizona is not really world eaters on defense. Granted, we did turn the ball over a shit ton against them, so it sounds funny to say that, but I mean, the Pac-12 and their defense is not really what they're known for, so I think that could be why they look better in the bowl game. Hopefully, maybe they are better, but they definitely need to step it up. Bill Beedenbo needs to fix it quick, fast, and in a hurry.
Yeah, so it just, that entire offensive line frustrated me all year. And so, you know, we got a couple of transfers that are coming in, and, you know, we got a couple of high school recruits that I'm pretty excited for. So hopefully we'll be able to get those guys right and, you know, get that entire unit going in the right direction. Because we got a stacked wide receiver class or, you know, room. And then we have some pretty big running backs coming in that, you know, we're going to need them to block for, and, you know, Jackson Arnold, who can run or he can stand in that pocket. He can even take those hits if he needs to, but would prefer him to not to.
So you brought up NIL a minute ago when we talked about Saban, and I want to dive more into that now because this is really becoming a huge fiasco. Just yesterday or was it this morning, Florida State got in trouble because it said they violated or they did something wrong. They used NIL as a way to recruit. But, I mean, we saw it in our group text. We all kind of thought that's what NIL was for, is you help use that to recruit. And, like, that's never been a secret. But now it's a big deal with them. It felt like this was just NCAA trying to check them because they were going to file a lawsuit for not getting into the playoffs. And then a bigger issue, we see a guy, I'm going to call him Crybaby Williams, from up in USC, says he wants assurance that the Bears will be trading their first overall pick before declaring for the draft. The fact that these players are making the kind of money they are and have the things that they have in college right now, in a way, it's good. These guys are able to support family members, pay for things that they would have never been able to do, and they're able to do it, and they know they can do it right now. So if they get injured, they got money. I get that. But it feels like there needs to be some kind of cap. There needs to be some checks and balances with this thing because these guys shouldn't have this much say in what's going on, especially a college guy that's proven nothing at the NFL level, especially a guy that just went 7-5 at USC in a weak conference, especially a guy who just cried like a little baby back, you know what, on national TV in front of God and everybody. Like, he showed a lot about his immaturity, and, like, he's not a leader. And this guy's trying to call the shots from back whenever he was saying he wanted partial ownership of the team that drafts him. I mean, NIL has really started to go to some of these guys' heads, and they're taking advantage of it. And it, I don't know, something needs to be done to fix it. I'm not sure what can be done or if everybody else feels the same way. But a guy like Caleb Williams could quickly ruin this for everybody and turn a lot of people off to it. I think it's already, I mean, you like you already said, Saban kind of stepping away, and you feel like it's because of the NIL. And I get it. It doesn't feel like you should be having to chase these players and get in a bidding war with other schools to bring them in.
Yeah, I agree with that. There definitely needs to be plenty of checks and balances with it. And I feel like when we, you know, we created this thing of NIL, it was more like a just a raw, you know, thing. We didn't know what direction it was going to go in. And so we just, you know, left it open-ended like that. But now that we've seen kind of like the self-entitlement and, you know, the ridiculous greediness that we've seen a lot of players obtain through it, there definitely needs to be upgrades to it and change it for the better. Otherwise, you're going to have to get rid of it, because there's no way we can keep going with it like this. Otherwise, it's going to completely ruin college football more than what it has already done. Uh-huh. And it's just like, yeah, I mean, wanting to know, you should be forced to transfer, or not to transfer, but to declare way sooner than what the deadline is. Maybe that's what the NFL can do. Change that deadline as well to way sooner, because him holding out until, you know, to make this decision until he sees who's going to have number one is ridiculous. And like you said, he shouldn't have that kind of power. And I mean, either you get drafted or you don't. And like, if you want to ruin your dream, like, you know, go get injured, go, you know, be out for an entire year. And
there's no guarantee he's even the first overall pick. I mean,
no, if the Bears stay, they're probably taking Marvin Harrison.
I mean, that's who I would take personally. But I mean, we had in our group chat with all the guys that we play fantasy football with, when he went and he cried in the stands like a little baby, basically like a newborn baby that just got something taken away from him. He felt like he was entitled to go back-to-back Heismans. He felt like he was entitled and he should be in the college football playoff just because he's Caleb Williams. He didn't go out there and earn it. He didn't go out there and work for it. Neither did his team. Neither did his coach. And instead of manning up and owning that and be like, yeah, there's things I need to change, there's things I need to do. I mean, look back in the day, 2008, when Tim Tebow and his team lost, when everybody expected them to win the championship hands down, he didn't make excuses for it. He won the press conference. He owned it. He said, you deserve better. I'll be better. He was better from then on out, went out and won the championship. Caleb Williams does not hold himself accountable. He doesn't hold his teammates accountable, and his coach doesn't hold any of them accountable. So from the head coach, that's step one. He needs to hold everybody accountable. But as the quarterback, you're the leader on and off that field. You set the tone. You are the example. All eyes are on you. And he constantly dropped the ball. I think his attitude is something that needs to be taken into consideration going through the process, whether he does come out this year or not. I personally think if he goes back to college, he's going to have another year like this year. And I think it should hurt his draft stock. Not Williams isn't a great football player. He is. He's got all the talent in the world. He can do anything on that football field. But if things don't go his way, he will quit. He will shrivel up and disappear. And you can't have that as a guy that is supposed to lead your team and supposed to win you games.
Yeah, I mean, I agree. It's going to impact everything in terms of, you know, just how he's been acting, just even just last year. If you just look at it from this last year, NFL teams aren't going to want that in their leader, especially a guy they're going to be paying, you know, $24 million in the signing bonus just alone. Like, that's what the first overall pick gets, I think. And so it's like, you don't want to give a guy that who's going to do all of that. And in terms of wanting partial ownership, I think that's only allowed if it's like the Green Bay Packers, because their fans own them. Like, you know, you can own a share of the Packers right now. If you had enough money, you can just go and buy a part of the team. Like, it's insane. And it's like, I think the only team that would work for anyway is the Green Bay Packers. And they're, you know, they're in the playoffs with Jordan Love.
An owner could sell a percentage of the team to someone if they ever decided to.
I didn't even know that. So, yeah. I mean, at least this is opening up an educational experience if that's even possible.
Yeah, no,
I didn't even know that.
I want to say, I could be completely wrong, but a lot of teams, like, they have a majority owner. But there are other people who have put in money and are part of that ownership group as well.
Yeah, stockholder.
Exactly. And so they are technically still owners.
Okay.
But like Jerry Jones, he's the main owner of the Cowboys.
Yeah.
So whether that be Jerry Jones has 51% of the stake of the Cowboys or he has 99% of the stake of the Cowboys, he has majority stake. but odds are there's probably a small percentage, or it could be a bigger percentage depending on that owner's financial needs and where they're at that point in time, if their pockets are hurting somewhere else that has a percentage of the team. And obviously the guy with the biggest percentage gets to call most of the shots.
That's a good point. I wouldn't even think about that. When I hear part ownership, I'm thinking of like, he wants to be a co Jerry Jones kind of, you know, like he wants to be up there, like making the decisions with him.
Well,
I'm sure he does want that, but like, that's what I took that as, instead of, you know, just being a stockholder. So that makes a little bit more sense now that, you know, we've talked about it. But anyway, it's ridiculous that he wants that demand, especially when he has, you know, he's won a Heisman, but that's all he's done in college.
Yeah, how many Heisman guys?
He's got two bowl games out of 3 years.
How many Heisman winners have we seen do absolutely nothing in the NFL?
Oh, plenty.
Plenty. Exactly. So Heisman doesn't
mean Tebow anything. Won a playoff game, but that's about it.
Well, I mean, not even just Tebow. Ron Dane, he never did anything in the NFL. Yeah. Eric Couch, nothing. Jason White, nothing. Sam Bradford had a very mediocre career.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it's out there.
Maybe we just keep going with it.
Yeah. So, I mean, just because you want a Heisman, I mean, like I said, does he have all the talent in the world? Yes. Do I have any doubts that he can make all the throws? No. I think he can make all the throws. I think he's a great runner. I do think he is a great football player. But his attitude sucks. His character sucks. And his leadership qualities suck.
So maybe he's the perfect guy for the Bears.
Maybe.
Lions fan came at me.
But, I mean, you see these guys in this draft. This is a very loaded NFL draft class for quarterbacks. I mean, you got guys like Michael Penix, who just took a team that nobody expected to get there to a national championship game. A guy that's played a lot of football, who's very smart, who's very mature for his years. And with all the arm talent in the world, this is a guy that's shown he can lead a team. This is a guy that's shown he can get guys to play for him. He carries himself the right way. Same with Jaden Daniels. He transferred to LSU. He got a lot of hate when a lot of people mocked him and really tried to run him into the ground. And instead of letting that get to him, he stayed to himself. He stayed composed. And these are guys who have carried themselves well, who have played a lot of football, have a lot of experience, and do things the right way. And to me, that speaks volumes of a guy, especially a young man going into the NFL who's about to get handed a buttload of money and the keys to a multi-billion dollar organization. So these are just things I would think about personally. Obviously, he's still going to be the first quarterback taken, I think, and it's not even close. But I do think these are things that should be considered that nobody's really looking at, that if Caleb Williams, his career doesn't turn out to what everybody thinks it will, this is what we can look back and say, this is why.
Yeah. We don't have to get into it too much, but I will say I've heard a lot of stuff coming from different NFL teams. They do love Drake May, and they love what he's going to bring to an NFL team. And so I do think the gap is closer between Caleb and Drake than, you know, just like it's not even close kind of thing. And so, like, you know, there could be a possibility or an alternate world where, you know, the team doesn't want to look at Caleb Williams and have to deal with all that stuff. And so they do take Drake May. It kind of depends on what NFL team takes them.
It sounds like a very Chicago Bears thing to do, like what they did with Mitch Trubisky.
I do think with them, they're not going to take a quarterback unless it is Caleb Williams.
I don't think they should take
it. I think with Washington might be the wild card. Like, if the Bears stay and pick Marvin Harrison, I think the Commanders could possibly go Drake May over Caleb Williams.
And this is
that's the team that's kind of said the most positive about Drake May. From what I've seen, I've followed a bunch of scouts on Twitter and now X, whatever it is. And then there's another guy that loves to do mock drafts and like talk about college players going to the NFL all year long. And so like, that's what I get from him. And so those are kind of my people that I listen to with all this, but.
No, I get why people like Drake May. He's a prototypical quarterback in terms of build. He has arm talent. He has played his sophomore year in college. He put up explosive numbers. Obviously he took a dip this year, and part of that could be due to the fact that Jalen Hyatt and Downs went to the NFL, who were both at North Carolina. No, Hyatt was at Tennessee. I'm sorry. Downs was at North Carolina.
I think there was someone else, but I forgot his name.
But, he lost NFL talent at receiver. I don't know. There's question marks to me. He plays in a weak conference. I don't know. I'm iffy on North Carolina quarterbacks just because here in the last 10 years, we've seen them fall in love with North Carolina quarterbacks. And these guys just ain't it. I mean, first it was Mitch Trubisky, who I had no idea who he was coming into that draft and did not understand why he was ranked ahead of guys like Watson and Mahomes coming out of college.
That's the only one, right, Mitch?
Well, they were really high on Sam Hartman, too, there for a while until his senior year. And things kind of turned into a clusterfuck there in Chapel Hill. And then they kind of backed off of him a little bit. But if you look at him now and what little bit he's done with the Commanders this year, they're riding high on Sam Hartman again. So, I mean, it seems like scouts, for whatever reason, tend to fall in love with North Carolina quarterbacks here the last 10 years. Me, I'm iffy. I would stay away from him. But there's a lot of quarterbacks, I think, that could be first-round talent. There's May, there's Williams, obviously. Those are usually the first two discussed. I've seen a lot of mock drafts where Jaden Daniels has jumped up into the top five of being drafted. I think a lot of people have Bo Nix as a first-round pick. Michael Penix, he's a borderline first-round pick who I would take in the first round, who unfortunately I feel is going to slip to the second round because of his age and injury history, which is unfortunate. And then the guy that keeps getting brought up that I just don't understand is J.J. McCarthy. Maybe I just haven't watched enough Michigan football, but that man is – he's a system quarterback. He's just like Quinn Ewers. Like, he relies on a defense and a great run game and just does the bare minimum.
Is there another quarterback that's kind of similar to Sam Hartman? Because Sam Hartman was Wake Forest and then Notre Dame.
Not Sam Hartman. Oh, shoot. Not Hartman. The dude that's in the Commanders quarterback right now.
Sam Howell.
Howell, yeah. Okay. I knew it was Sam.
I was like, I'm Sam sorry. Hartman was at Wake Forest. I was like, wait, did he play for North Carolina?
No, that was a good catch. Yes, Howell. You're right, Sam Howell.
I love Sam Hartman, but, you know, not like an NFL quarterback, but in college. Anyway, okay. Yeah, I wasn't even thinking of Sam Howell, but all right. Sorry. I was just sitting there looking up his stats. I was like,
wait. That was a good catch.
Sorry, what did you say the last bit? Because I was looking at the –
I was saying, well, there's a lot of guys going that are projected to be first round. But the one I don't understand is J.J. McCarthy.
Yeah.
Very system quarterback. Reminds me of Quinn Ewers in Texas. Relies on a good defense and a solid run game. Does the bare minimum. The numbers aren't there. He's not putting up explosive plays. I mean, he's just not turning the ball over. And that's really it. So, yeah.
So I will say Bo Nix and Michael Penix, I do believe, you know, they're going to be good quarterbacks in the NFL, but they're just so old. They're both 24, probably then going to be 25 by the time the draft happens. Like, that's
Joe
just,
Burrow was, what, 24 when he got drafted, wasn't he?
Well, yeah, but what has Joe Burrow completely done in the NFL since, you know?
He took his team to a Super Bowl.
Oh, yeah, but then they lost it. Anyway, so it's like, you know, they are super old, and so it's a risk to take because both of them are not on the level of a Joe Burrow. Like, we're not talking about either one of those two going number one right now. And so it's like, it's a risk given their age and obviously Penix with his injury career. And so, like, you know, I could see one of those sneaking into the first round. I don't think both would be. But then J.J. McCarthy is just the typical, like, you were on the best team and you took your team to, well, you were there with your team in the national championship game. I definitely think it was their defense in the run game. Yeah. I definitely think it was their defense in the run game. He had two stout running backs. And so it's like,
studs at running back. Speaking of running back, I brought it up to the group the other day. What round in the draft do you see the first running back coming off the board?
Because there's not
second. Because I could, man, I really agreed. Like, I could see the third round. There's not a running back that really jumps out to me this year that I would like. I feel like could really help my team and fill a need that I have.
There's no first round running backs, and I think there's going to be a carousel of free agency running backs this year.
I know the guy from Texas is projected to be the first running back.
Is he?
Yeah.
I thought Blake after, you know, the season he's had.
I would have said Blake, too. He's produced multiple years, not just one. He's a touchdown machine. That's just curious. I know it's a little off topic. It's not what we're talking about. But
there's Travion Henderson, I believe the dude from Arkansas. I think is where he went. But he's another running back that's going to be up there. I don't think I would take the Texas guy over him. But, you know, definitely Blake should be the first running back off the board. So I would say late second, early third, because there's just no first round talent at running back this year. But of course, there's always going to be those hidden gems that an offense is going to find and use them, and they're going to excel. So, you know, it's going to be interesting. Some school
we've never heard of before.
Exactly. Some
like freaking Isaiah Pacheco from Rutgers. Like, who's this?
Connecticut Tech or something like that. That's just a random school. I don't even know if that exists. But anyway, Yeah, it's going to be a different kind of running back class. It's definitely not a Bijan and Jahmyr Gibbs and the two running backs in the top 12 being taken kind of thing. And so, I think it will be a little bit of a carousel in running backs in free agency as well. So it probably works out better that it's not the best running back class in the draft.
So getting off of college football, I think we've touched on everything we can really touch on. I mean, unfortunately, we missed like the whole season. We weren't able to get into a lot of things that happened.
I do want to say one thing. It's crazy that we've reached an era now where we have coaches dropping videos about their staying at their current college. Like Dan Lanning was, you know, projected to take the Bama job, but then he released a video saying, "I'm not leaving." Or like he made a joke of like his players, like, "If you would never want to have to worry about your college coach leaving, then come to Oregon."
Yeah,
because I'm not leaving. And I'm like, all right, so we're in that era now where we got coaches dropping mixtapes and highlight videos.
Speaking of, we're talking about coaches that like to take the social media and be all flashy. There is something I want to touch on. I know we're way behind on it. It's been said. It's been done. It's over with. First of all, every single one of you that listens and everybody I've talked to that was dick riding on Deion Sanders in Colorado, shame on you, man. Like, you guys – and a lot of you guys that I talked to that were doing this, y'all know football. Y'all know better. Y'all are getting so hyped that they barely beat Colorado State on a game-winning touchdown when they were favored by 23 freaking points. Deion Sanders didn't do anything special. He won four fucking games. They're like, well, they only won one the year before. Like, cool. Cool. So what, now he's the tallest dwarf in the room? So he went from being the worst team in college football to maybe like the 10th worst? Like, they still suck. He didn't do anything special. This man got his own documentary and hadn't even coached a full season. Like, what is there to talk about? He hasn't done anything. And I like Deion. I think he can turn Colorado around. I think he is a good coach. I like his son. I think he's a great quarterback. But he hasn't done anything. And we're already handing this man his flowers like he's done something phenomenal. Like, well, he changed the culture. Like, did he? Because they're still losers. Like, I've never seen a coach actually... Was that earthquake?
I think that was an earthquake.
I think that was an earthquake. Everything's shaking.
No. Huh. When an earthquake happened in the winter?
I mean, it is Oklahoma. I guess.
There's no way it was wind because it's been feeling a lot longer. No,
the TVs were even shaking on the wall over there.
Okay, well, we just mid-podcast. We just had an earthquake.
Anyways, they're still losers. I've never seen a coach take a position group like he did his offensive line and just throw them under the bus. He wasn't a coach whenever he did that. He was a dad. He let that come first. As a coach of a university, you can't do that. And I think players are seeing that. We've seen a lot of guys decommit from Colorado throughout the season and here in this offseason because Deion Sanders will throw his players under the bus for why they're not succeeding. And that's unacceptable. You can't do that as a Division I football coach. You can't do that as a grown man coaching college kids. But I wanted to get that off my chest because I feel like for all the flowers that he got and all the praise and love he got, he deserves the criticism and more people should be throwing it his way than what he's gotten.
Yeah, I mean, I think we both kind of predicted it when we talked about it earlier, when we were, you know, putting out episodes every single week when we were talking about Colorado. It's like whenever you had that mass exodus of players leaving, and you had so many players just transferring out. Like, yeah, they were part of the one-win team, but like, you know, you're not going to do good when you're bringing in a whole bunch of people and you're messing with that chemistry. And so, like, we saw it, you know. And so, you know, I give us props on that. Like, we said they weren't going to do too great. I was rooting for them, but, you know, I'm not here sitting there giving them, like, you know.
Well, I wouldn't have got on them like this because, like we did see it coming. It was expected. This was going to be – it's a rebuilding year. It's going to take him a couple years to get Colorado where he wants them. At a higher level of football where talent is harder to come by, it's going to take more time. And I wouldn't have got on in and been this heavy against it if it weren't for the fact that everybody was just like, oh, my God, y'all see what dude I'm doing down there in Colorado? Like, what? What? Like, the dude didn't even go to a bowl game. Maybe if he went to a bowl game, then I can be like, yeah, I can see that. One win to six wins. He went to a bowl game. That's pretty impressive, but he didn't do that.
I will say, I just looked it up. We definitely felt the tremor. There was a 3.3 earthquake in Arcadia. Ooh, 10 minutes ago.
Nice.
So that definitely was at least a tremor of an earthquake. But yeah, so, you know, there's always going to be like those fanboys of, you know, a college team. I don't even know, like, Colorado had fans. Like, I don't know if they just came out of the woodshed or if they just wanted to jump on a trend.
They did, 100%.
Or if they just wanted to jump on a trend because, like, Colorado became a trend
I've
after.
I've never seen Dion a loser get his own documentary on anything. He got his own documentary on Amazon.
He didn't do it at Jackson State and then just jumps to Colorado, a one-win team, and then is automatically
– That's not true. He went to the historically black college national championship game 2 years in a row.
Okay.
He lost both of them, but he went.
Turned into the half of the Buffalo Bills there for a little bit.
So transitioning from college, let's go ahead and go to the NFL. We started with coach changing in college. Let's go ahead and do the same thing with the NFL. From one legend of Nick Saban, the best to do it in college football, let's go ahead and jump into the best to ever do it in the NFL. My New England Patriots and Coach Bill Belichick have mutually decided to part ways, which this is the right way to do it. This is what you do when you have a coach that's done so much for your organization and you respect them. And Robert Kraft did the right thing. He didn't pull a Jerry Jones where you completely disrespect the coach that's done so much for your organization. We saw him do it with Tom Landry and then Jimmy Johnson. They handled it the right way. And then obviously they had a plan in place. This morning they hired Gerard Mayo, which I personally like. Gerard Mayo has been a part of the New England Patriots ever since he was drafted in the first round of the NFL draft. He played his entire career there. And then for the last 5 years has been on the coaching staff there. He's sat behind Bill Belichick. He's learned a lot, which I think will help him. But he is also his own person. He's young. He's going to bring new life into the organization. He's going to bring new ideas and help take them into a new direction, which they so desperately need right now, based off the last few seasons. Hopefully this will finally get us to move off from Mac Jones. We have a really high draft pick, which hopefully we take full advantage of to get somebody in that can help turn this organization around and build around. So I'm excited for the future. We already had some rough years, so I'm not worried about a few more rough years. But I like the Gerard Mayo hire. I don't think young coaches is as big of a deal as it used to be. You look at Sean McVay, who's only 30 days older than Gerard Mayo. He's already won a Super Bowl. DeMeco Ryans in his first year as a head coach, who was also a former linebacker in the NFL, took a team that nobody expected to the playoffs. Minnesota, I know you hate the Vikings, but he has done a good job with them for a young coach. I mean, there's a lot of young coaches we see succeeding at a very high level right now in this league. So him being young, I don't have any worries about. But it'll just be interesting to see how differently he takes his team and leads them and what he does different from what Belichick did.
Yeah, so it definitely was a less surprising of a, you know, parting ways than Nick Saban, because it was kind of, you know, been talked about and discussed, you know, for at least halfway through the season. And he kind of expected it at the beginning, like maybe this could be his last. And so it's still going to be a shock, not him being with New England. I think he does land somewhere.
Right, or he's on
gonna,
the record saying he still wants to coach.
Yeah. And so, like, he won't be, like, completely missing. And so, you know, but it's how you need to do it. You know, the Patriots kind of in that spot where you guys are definitely going to be going after a quarterback. I don't hate the Gerard Mayo pick. It's just he's a defensive-minded head coach, and I hope that he is the one that kind of breaks this trend. But the last couple defensive-minded head coaches haven't completely worked out that I know of. Like, Brian Flores shouldn't have been fired. He was doing good, but he was fired. And then from what, in my mind, again, you are going to bring some, like, difference of opinion that is going to be great. But in my mind, I'm still plagued by Matt Patricia, who I hate so much. That's still fresh in my mind, being a Lions fan.
Matt Patricia is the defensive version of Josh McDaniels. They were just very fortunate to be around Bill Belichick and Tom Brady at a very great time of an organization. Neither one of them could coach to save their lives. And that's why when I saw rumors Josh McDaniels might be the new head coach of the Patriots, I was like, oh, okay, I'll just go beat my head against the brick wall now.
And is it the DC of the Eagles that went to the Cardinals? I think the OC for the Eagles became their head coach.
I don't know.
Something like that. I think Nick Sirianni was their OC at one point.
I know whoever went to the Cardinals, though, I know the Cardinals didn't win a lot of games, but I think he did a good job of putting a competitive-ass team out on the field.
That is true.
They won some games they shouldn't have had.
He did pretty good.
They played
They just need to upgrade that roster.
They just played, and they played pretty much everybody really, really close, really tough. I mean, whoever that coach was there, I can't think of him off the top of my head right now either, but they made Josh Dobbs look like he might be breaking through in the NFL. Obviously, that wasn't the case. We saw that when he got to Minnesota. But I think if they had Kyler all year, I think they win two or three more games than what they ended up winning.
Yeah. I don't have an issue with the age at all. Like, he's 37. Like, that's not...
And you're wrong.
Incredibly young.
DeMeco Ryans is a defensive-minded head coach.
Oh, yeah, you're right. I completely
forgot. In his first year, took the Texans to the playoffs.
I completely forgot about the Texans. Sorry, Jared.
Former linebacker. Former linebacker, just like Jerod Mayo.
Him. All right, well, I hope him and Jerod Mayo and...
Jerod.
Antonio Pierce.
Jerod.
Is it Jerod?
Okay. Jerod.
Whatever.
Say it with me.
Jared. Okay. I hope those three still have success because Jerod has success. They're the two keep their success because I forgot about Antonio Pierce as well. He's done pretty good with the Raiders.
I'm glad you brought up Antonio Pierce. I liked what he did with that team too.
I just proved myself wrong, but you know, it happens.
I like what he was doing in Las Vegas, and I think he should keep the job there. I think they should give him a couple years to see what he can do there. But do you think Mark Davis gives it, or is it? Yeah, Mark Davis, do you think he gives him the chance? Because Josh Jacobs went on record and said, if Pierce is there next year, then I'm rocking with him. But if not, I don't know what I'm doing.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Like, to keep, like, team morale and team chemistry up, like, you definitely have to. I feel like it will come down to, like, it probably won't matter what he truly wants. Like, he has to if he wants to keep a competitive team on the field. And, like, it, you know, with him, it hasn't been coaching as to why they've lost some of the games that they've lost. It's been because they do need to upgrade that roster. When it was John Gruden their last coach? Because they fired him. Or no, it was Josh McDaniels.
Josh.
Wow. Yeah, it was Josh McDaniels. He was one of the problems. For sure. He was one of the problems that they were having. And so he needed to be fired. But then whenever Antonio Pierce took over, he just completely changed the culture and the mindset of that team. And now, you know, they've lost some games since then, but it was, you know, because they do need to upgrade that roster.
Oh, yeah.
Aiden O'Connell shouldn't be a starting quarterback in the NFL. He'll be a good backup, but, like, he shouldn't be a starting NFL quarterback.
I don't know, man. So, Aiden looked pretty solid in some games.
Some games.
I mean, he's a rookie. He outplayed Bryce Young this year. If you look at his numbers, and he played far fewer games than Bryce Young did.
I think he has a decent O-line, and you have – a somewhat pretty good wide receiver core. Like, if you're really good, though, you should still be winning.
Somewhat.
Games.
He's only got Devontae Adams, one of the best receivers.
I mean, I like Jacoby Myers low-key.
Yeah, Jacoby Myers was nice this year.
And I don't even know what happened to Hunter Renfrow. It's like he just dropped off the face of the earth.
He's probably gone.
I think Henry Ruggs has been more relevant than he has since Henry Ruggs has been put in prison. It's crazy.
Too soon.
Too soon.
Circling back to Bill Belichick, he is on record saying he still wants to coach, but it was time for the organization to head a new direction, and then it was time for him to ultimately go a new direction too and figure out if he still got it in his career or if he is just done. I think in New England, all he would have ever been doing was trying to chase the ghost of him and Brady and trying to either there's no doing that in New England. But I saw a thing earlier today, some quote unquote expert said the three teams that he links Belichick to are the Atlanta Falcons, the Los Angeles Chargers, and the Dallas Cowboys, which is interesting to me, obviously, because Mike McCarthy is still very much employed in Dallas right now, and they're the number two seed in the playoffs. So that is interesting. But that's what I want to touch on. I want to talk about it. Do you think if Dallas comes up short again and they lose in the first or second round of the playoffs, do you think Jerry Jones in his mind is like, oh, I go get Belichick, I'm winning a Super Bowl by McCarthy?
I'm glad you asked me this question because I'm going to go on a rant. I hate Mike McCarthy. If they lose at any point before the Super Bowl, he is gone. He is out of there. He is such a bad play caller. And, like, being a Lions fan, I watched it firsthand. I even loved it because he was at Green Bay. He is such a bad play caller. He threw that last Dallas – like, they ended up winning that game. I'm going to bring it up, and I'm going to hate myself afterwards. But the Detroit-Dallas game – and I've been talking to a couple of Cowboys fans about this too, so if they're listening, it's a shout-out to you guys. It was like – they had a tripping call that shouldn't have been on them. Either no tripping or tripping on Aiden, because I think it was Aiden that ended up tripping Peyton Hendershot. They called it on Peyton Hendershot, and it backed him up. But instead of running and like just running clock down because we only had like two timeouts. They could have ran plenty more clock off and gave the ball to us at like 50 seconds, but instead they gave it to us at a minute 40. Like, you throw the ball like three times on that drive. If you run the ball, just run. It doesn't have to pick up yards. Just run the ball. You can run off so much time, and you give us the ball back with like 50 seconds.
I'm looking at you, Kyle Shanahan, in Super Bowl 28-3.
But like, this is just one drive of an entire career of making bad decisions. And so, yes, if the Cowboys come up short of a Super Bowl, I think he's gone. And so I think that's also why Bill Belichick has been linked to them. Now, I don't know if they're going to go after a Bill Belichick or if they're going to try to go for one of these hot new coaches that are going to be, you know, because whoever makes it to the Super Bowl, those OCs and DCs are going to be heavily looked at the end of the year. So, you know, they might go after one of those new ones and kind of fall in love for the Super Bowl hype kind of thing. But, you know, we'll see. But the team I want for Bill Belichick to go to would absolutely be the Chargers. Way too much talent on that team to have it all be thrown away because of terrible, terrible, terrible coaching.
Staley, yeah, absolute joke.
Absolutely terrible. Like, there's way too much. Like, they should have won the division this year. That's how bad the Chiefs were this year.
Yeah,
that the Chargers should have taken it and won it by a landslide.
All right, so
I'm going to get off that one, but
we're going to put on our GM caps here a little bit. We're going to play around. So we got seven. As of right now, we have seven head coaching jobs opened up. We have the Carolina Panthers job, which I don't think anybody wants. The Tennessee Titans job, which I think it's very, very wrong that Mike Vrabel was fired. I think he did a phenomenal job with that team. And this organization is about to head backwards quick, fast, and in a hurry if they weren't already there. But I think they're tearing down and they're rebuilding from scratch. We saw Derrick Henry say goodbye to the fans, thank them for everything after that last game against the Jaguars, which shout out to Sunshine for choking the playoffs away. I keep trying to tell all of y'all that Sunshine's not that guy, but y'all just don't believe me.
Unless I was a believer in him.
And
Justin Bieber.
The Las Vegas Raiders, technically that job is there. Antonio Pierce was there on an interim basis, so therefore the season is over. He's not technically their head coach right now, so we do have to wait and see what they do. So technically that job is open. The Los Angeles Chargers, as we've already talked about. The Atlanta Falcons job, Arthur Smith gone after three straight 7-10 seasons, model of consistency. A very surprising head coaching job opening, considering his team. Didn't the Seahawks make the playoffs?
Yeah.
So he.
No, he didn't. No, they didn't.
I thought they did.
No, it was Green Bay, Rams, and
that's right.
And
that's right.
Eagles.
Okay, never mind. So Seattle Seahawks, Pete Carroll, they pretty much forced him out. I think they decided he's too old and they want to go in a younger direction is what it seems like. And then the Washington Commanders job. Of those seven jobs that I just listed off, I want you to pick the one that if you were a head coach seems like the most desirable. And that's this organization we're going to start with and try to play who the next head coach will be there.
Okay, say the teams one more time. So we got Atlanta, we got Carolina, we've got Tennessee.
Washington. Chargers. Raiders.
Okay.
And, yeah, you said Panthers. Yeah, Panthers.
Okay. And the Seahawks.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, I just went on a positive rant about the Chargers being so completely talented. So, obviously, that would be number one. So, I'm just going to say the Chargers, but I'm going to pick another team as well.
Okay.
Another team that I would find desirable if I was a head coach, kind of just got fired or just got parted ways with, like with Pete Carroll, I would say Seattle. You do need a quarterback. I don't think Geno is going to be your future, but no. You've got DK, you've got Tyler Lockett, who's got good experience, but you got a very young JSN. You can upgrade that offensive line, but then you've got a defense that I think is pretty promising in terms of corners, which getting corner help is always so like very rare. And you've got Tariq Woolen, Devin Witherspoon, mm-hmm. like, you know, you can bring in a linebacker and, you know, a couple defensive line players. And it's like, you know, you turn that defense just completely around.
Yeah, they got great talent there for sure. Yeah.
And so, like, they got a very, very good and like passionate fan base, I think, too, being up in Seattle a couple of times. It's like they were everywhere.
And they just barely missed out on the playoffs. So let's start with Seattle. Pete Carroll now either is going to step into another position with the organization or he's going to go out and find another coaching job. I don't think Pete Carroll wants to be done coaching. I just think the Seahawks are done with him coaching them. So with that being said, with him now ultimately out the door, who do you like in that role to come in and replace Pete Carroll to help continue to guide this young team and ultimately get them back to where they want to be, which is obviously another Super Bowl run?
I mean, Eric Bieniemy's name is going to be up there on almost every single one of these. If he doesn't get a head coaching spot this go around, like, it's going to be absolutely ridiculous. I think there's absolutely no way that doesn't happen. And so, you know, Eric Bieniemy was always going to be a top choice there. I don't think Bill Belichick's the right coach for this spot, which is why I think he's been linked to those three teams. But yeah, I think it's going to be ultimately just a new young guy that comes available. I don't want to say Ben Johnson. Being a Lions fan, I'm not even going to put that out there. So, you know, but there's going to be that next young guy that's going to be kind of taking over. So I think while Jerod Mayo is the youngest right now, I think before the season, you know, completely concludes and gets into the offseason, I think there's going to be probably maybe even someone that takes over that role. Like, I don't know, some of these other OCs and DCs are kind of what their ages are, but I think there's going to be someone else there. I definitely don't have any other name other than Eric Bieniemy. I think maybe Brian Flores could get a head coaching spot somewhere. I think he's done a whole lot for Minnesota's defense. And I think there's a lot of, hopefully there's a lot of GMs that agree that, like, he should not have been fired from, you know, the Dolphins in general. I do like Mike McDaniels though. So is it Mike McDaniels or is it Daniels?
From where?
From the Dolphins.
Mike McDaniels.
McDaniels. Okay. Yeah. I do like him as he's hilarious. Sometimes I don't think he's trying to be, but he's just absolutely hilarious. Yeah, he's a good coach and he's got the Dolphins in the playoffs right now. So I do like him as a coach, but I'd also think Brian Flores was ridiculously fired.
Oh, 100%.
Yeah. So I think he'll be a name that goes around to in the coaching carousel.
So I think Eric Bieniemy is going to be too easy to say. Obviously, we could put him anywhere.
Yeah, exactly.
Me and you both seem to be on the same page that he probably should have had a job a couple of years ago, and the fact that he hasn't is kind of crazy. And for whatever reason, people continue to give. I don't buy. So I won't take the easy route and say Eric Bieniemy. There's a guy like Dan Quinn who I think makes a lot of sense. We touched on how they have a young defense in Seattle that's got some really good young players on there. There's also a mix of veteran leadership with a guy like Bobby Wagner who continues to play at a very high level. We've seen what he can do with that defense and what he can do with I think the corners in Seattle, even though they're younger, I think they have the potential to be better than the guys that are in Dallas right now. And we've seen what he's done with Trayvon Diggs. He had an 11-interception season. We've seen what he did with Blaine this year, who set the NFL record for pick sixes. I mean, he's turned that defense around from a joke to one of the absolute best. And I think he can kind of do the same thing with Seattle, help really elevate that young defense, which would be huge because of the division they're in with the offensive firepower like what San Francisco has and what the Rams have surprisingly shown to have, which I don't think any, or at least I did not expect them to have this year. Obviously we knew Cooper Kupp, but Puka Nacua to step up and play as well as he did. And then Kyren Williams, I mean, the Rams rebuilt real fast. And then Kyler is always a very explosive player. And so, I mean, to elevate that defense there would be huge, and what I think would be a huge stepping stone to help get them into the playoffs where they want to be and help make a run. He's a guy who has made a run at a Super Bowl before in Atlanta, and I think he did it with a far less talented defense. Obviously, they had a great offense with Julio and Matt Ryan, but the offense is there. Obviously, like you said, they do need to go out and find their future at quarterback, but Geno is serviceable right now. The receivers are there. Kenneth Walker's a beast. So really, the offense is there. The defense is what needs to step. He seems to be the right guy. He's one of the few guys that's gotten fired, went and got an assistant job, and gotten better as a coach, it seems, so far. So for me, he makes a lot of sense. Another guy who I think could make a lot of sense is Jim Harbaugh. I think Harbaugh's gone from college. I think he did everything he set out to do. We've seen him in that division have a lot of success. I think he would love to be able to try to stick it to the Niners twice a year. He strikes me as that guy who is very petty and would like to get revenge. And so I could see him wanting to do that. And then if we're talking about a guy – that is a defensive-minded coach, very hard-nosed coach. Vrabel, to a lesser extent, could work there. I think he could help elevate that defense. They have a great running back. Obviously, he's not on the level that Derrick Henry was, but he could help change that offensive around. I think the defense is the biggest thing to help elevate there. And then give me one second. What's his name? Oh, hold on. Shane Waldron, their offensive coordinator, is a guy they could promote from within. That's where my mind is at. That would be the best hire for them, considering they did get rid of Pete Carroll.
Yeah, and so when we're talking about Dan Quinn, and you know, I think he's definitely a petty kind of guy as well. Like, he's definitely like, you know, I'm going to get revenge on you, even if there's no reason to really get revenge on you. Mm-hmm. And so, like, he would also make sense for a Washington job of, like, it doesn't have the pieces there. But, like, we saw him bring in Deron. I didn't know about Deron Bland before this season when he led in pick sixes. I don't know if you did. I knew about Trayvon Diggs because I think he went to Bama, didn't he?
Yes.
Yeah. So his name was – he's been there. But, like, I didn't know he was, like, 11 interceptions kind of guy. And so, like, he can take players who are maybe don't have, like, the biggest of names and make them, like, league known. And that's exactly what you need in a spot like Washington, especially when you're dealing with, you know, a Jalen Hurts tush-push kind of thing, which I think is going to be banned after this year. But and you're dealing with the firepower the Eagles are going to have next year. And then with, you know, the Cowboys, and they always seem to have a good team on the field. And so, you know, dealing with Washington, if they ever want to get back to any kind of prominence in that division, like, you need a defensive-minded head coach. So if you don't get Dan Quinn, then you go after a Brian Flores or a mm-hmm. Mike Vrabel. I want to have Dan Quinn or Mike Vrabel. I think Mike Vrabel makes a lot of sense there, too.
In Washington. So yeah. The only problem with what you're saying with the petty thing with Dan Quinn – as compared to Harbaugh. Harbaugh was fired by the 49ers after he took them to the Super Bowl and stuff. Dan Quinn's not going to be fired by the Cowboys. They'd be crazy to fire him after what he's done for that defense the last few years and help make them one of the better groups in the NFL.
Yeah.
But since you brought it to Washington, Vrabel and Flores are my top two guys there. I think Vrabel would embrace the challenge. It would be kind of like what he inherited in Tennessee, which was an absolute mess. He could help. He would build it from scratch the way he wants it. He would get his guys in there, and he would make it his team. It would have his identity all over it, which I think he would love. And I think he's the type of guy who wouldn't run from the challenge, and he would fully embrace it. And then Brian Flores, I think, is another guy who his career got off to a good start. He had the Dolphins on winning seasons and then unjustly fired for whatever reason. But that being said, I feel like a lot of teams are scared to touch Brian Flores right now because of the lawsuit he filed against the league and everything. But the Commanders don't strike me as the type of team that would really care. The Commanders are a team that's been in absolute scrutiny for what feels like forever now. And so I could see them taking a chance on a guy like Brian Flores, even if it's just going to piss the league off. So for that reason, I like those two guys there a lot.
And they have a guy there now who's like, you know, he's not going to bow down to the league. I think he had a GM change, I'm pretty sure. And like, he's wanting to change them back to the Redskins. I heard that, like, there's a whole, like, couple tribes that are wanting them to change it back.
Well, the tribes are filing a lawsuit.
He's thinking about it.
They're filing a lawsuit against them.
They had some kind of change. I don't know if it was owner or GM, but he was wanting to change it back too. So, you know, him bringing in a guy who's also been under scrutiny would also make sense, like you were saying. So I was just agreeing with your point there.
So switching it around, a team who I think is going to be an absolute there's no better way to put it than it is a shit show, that organization is. I think it's going to be one of the hardest rebuilding jobs there is. There's a rookie quarterback there who I don't think lived up to what he was supposed to do. It's the Carolina Panthers job. If I was a coach, I wouldn't want to touch that job with a 15-foot pole. But that being said, somebody is going to take it. Somebody is going to want it because it is a head coaching job in the NFL. And so Vrabel, again, is another guy who I think if Carolina's willing to give him the time, which I don't know because their owner is an absolute joke there. He's not proven to give his coaches the time that they need, the chance that they need to get their guys in and rebuild this team. But if he's willing to do that, a guy like Mike Vrabel, he's just a very hard-nosed guy, a very competitive guy, blue-collar guy. He's not scared of work. He's not scared to get in there and rip that team apart and stamp his identity all over it, which is very physical football and a hard-nosed running game, which is great. If you're Chuba Hubbard, you would love to have a head coach like that who – as a player seemed to take a step forward this year, positively for his career. And for a young quarterback that struggled like Bryce Young, that would, you would think only help him too, because it takes some pressure off him to have to make as many plays throwing the ball would they have a predominantly run heavy offense. So to me, he makes sense there. And I don't know if I really like anybody else for the Carolina job. I mean, maybe if you want to go offensive minded, because you do have Bryce Young and you want to try to build an offense around him and get him some explosive guys, maybe you go with a guy like Bobby Slowick, the offensive coordinator down there in Houston. We just saw what he did with a rookie quarterback and CJ Stroud, the receivers he put around him, a bunch of young guys who had great seasons, and Nico Collins, Tank Dell. He seemed to revive Devin Singletary's career, who was going nowhere and had a pretty – he stepped in and played well. I don't know if he can really help that defense in the way it needs to be helped. But right now, I think if you're an owner, maybe he's looking at, right now I need to elevate Bryce Young because we did just go spend a first overall pick on him. Not only did we do that, but we traded up and traded away our best player to do so.
Yeah, the Carolina job is going to be interesting. I mean – I do like Bryce Young, but there's plenty of people who don't. They do need help on that offensive line. You don't really have like a whole lot of like, I mean, you got Jonathan Mingo, but like that's pretty much it. Chark is kind of in that range where like he's not old, but he's not like the greatest one either. And then Adam Thielen is super old. He was pretty good, you know, for a couple of games there, and just kind of had a fall off.
He got off to a great start.
But like he's not like a young receiver that you can like, you know,
right,
keep building on kind of thing. And then you got that defense where there's a couple good pieces there that I do like. You got Jeremy Chinn, J.C. Horn, Brian Burns, Derek Brown. Stays. Yeah, if they all stay and, you know, don't get ushered out with the offseason going on. And so it's like it's going to be interesting. I don't know if they go for like their future head coach. And, you know, the coach they do bring in, I think, is going to be more just a bridge coach anyway. So I do think they're going to try to go after one of the DCs or OCs that do open up. I think that fits them best.
So the Panthers. So we'll move on to a job that it's not an exciting job, I don't think, for any coach, especially because, you know, there's a rebuild that's coming. And not only is there a rebuild that's coming, but there's three teams in that division who have established they have their future at quarterback with C.J. Stroud in Houston. He's the future there. They're two, in my opinion, they're at least two, if not 3 years ahead on their rebuild. What they did this year with Ryans and Stroud and those guys was just incredible. I mean, we talked about it just from the draft. We loved how aggressive he was to trade back up, not only to get his quarterback at two, but to get the guy to build his defense around at three was phenomenal. Anthony Richardson showed that he could play in this level, and the Colts were one game away from making the playoffs with a first-year head coach. So, I mean, they had a phenomenal job there. They have weapons. They obviously have Jonathan Taylor. Michael Pittman had a very good year. And the Jaguars, who I am not as high on as a lot of people are, they got more talented but got worse as a team. But all three of those guys, all three of those teams are young organizations with young teams that all have their coach and they have their quarterback. The Tennessee Titans don't have any of that. I don't think Will Levis is a guy. I know you don't think Will Levis is a guy. Ryan Tannehill damn sure isn't the guy. They don't have their guy there, I don't think, at a quarterback. Derrick Henry, I think, is gone. Every big star that they had is gone. Jeffrey Simmons is really the best player that they have there, but one defensive tackle can only do so much for a team. But that being said, Mike Vrabel put his stamp as hard-nosed defense, and we're going to grind it out and run you into the ground. I think they're trying to get away from that. The rebuild's coming. I think they're going to try to change their identity. So I think a guy like Ben Johnson makes sense. We've seen his offenses up there in Detroit. Obviously, you've seen it. Detroit has explosive offenses, And I think in that division, they think they need an explosive offense with a young quarterback and young playmakers around him to compete and keep up with those guys. I think he makes sense from that aspect. He's the complete opposite of what Mike Vrabel was as a coach. And if they're bringing in somebody like Vrabel, if they wanted to keep with what Vrabel was doing, it makes no sense to let him go. He could have rebuilt it. He's not scared of that work. So that tells me they want something different. Ben Johnson and Mike Vrabel, night and day different.
Okay, you bring up a good point. And like Ben Johnson's a really good option there. But I also think, like, I know Todd Monken is with the Ravens. If they win the Super Bowl, I can see some of the teams kind of reaching out to him, trying to get an offer. I think the Titans could very much make sense for that. I think that the Ravens have had a pretty spectacular offense. I do think there's a lot of talent there, so that could be why. But I do like his play calling and like his vision for offense. And so, you know, I'm just, again, being biased, I'm going to put Todd Monken out there since, I mean, you did throw Ben Johnson out there, so to be different as well. But I do think that Todd Monken is an option. I think even with, see, I don't know, if the Ravens disappoint and they don't go to the Super Bowl, I think he could come back and run it again. But if they make the Super Bowl or win it, I think he is going to be gone. And so, you know, I'm going to put Todd Monken around in that for the Titans. But, like, you get a quarterback. Again, I've already been completely out. Like, Will Levis is a joke. Malik Willis is a joke. That's the guy they took in the third, fourth round the year before. It's like, you know, it's whatever. I love Mike Vrabel. Like, I don't even know if he had a hand in the picks. He may not have. Some coaches don't, some do. But you should get a receiver. It's a deep wide receiver class. You could probably get a couple, if we're being honest. You could probably get Malik Nabers with your first round pick and then get another one at the end. But then you get a running back, like, you know, it could be a good option for them not having the best of a running back class, because you could get them in like the second or third. You can get like a Blake Corum, the dude from Texas.
Well, I can see him riding with Tajay Spears going forward. I mean, they drafted him in what, the second?
Yeah.
Second or third round. They drafted Tajay Spears pretty high last year, who had a pretty good career in Tulane. So, I mean, he saw some very valuable snaps this year playing behind Derrick Henry. So, to me, it seems like they were just kind of – they were easing him into the role that is about to be his next year.
I like Tajay Spears, but it's like, you know, I think he's a better complement than he is, like, main running back.
And that could be we're certainly going to find out, that is for sure.
If it's Ben Johnson that does take that over, then it's definitely going to be another running back, because he – you know, he's excelled, especially this year, having two running backs.
Yeah.
And so, you know, with Jahmyr Gibbs almost rushing for 1,000 and David rushing for 1,000. So he's definitely excelled with two running backs. And so if it is Ben, I definitely could see it. If it's Todd, I feel like he goes more of the main one running back. And so it'll be interesting to see if he stays Tajay or goes another running back. I feel like Darren Waller is going to be a name for the tight end position, because they don't have like the best of tight ends there. Mm-hmm. But getting like a Darren Waller, or, you know, if Kate Otten becomes available for the Bucks.
But didn't Waller show under contract with the Giants?
You can trade for him.
Okay.
Yeah. But you can make a trade for him. Like, some of their picks are going to be like top of the round kind of thing. So, like, you know, a third could be looked at as like a high value for some other team, or like the Giants, you know, because it's not going to be late third. But right. Like, you'd have to trade for Waller or like Kate Otten, but like those could be options where you could go get it. And I like Kate Otten over, because Kate is younger and he's, you know,
stays healthy,
blocker. Yeah. But anyway, like there's upgrades to be made.
Right.
And like with a good offensive minded head coach, you could really start to improve this team.
So the next three jobs are the ones that are the most fun to me. So I'm going to let you pick where you want to go first. We can either go to Vegas, Los Angeles, or we can go to ATL.
We kind of touched a little bit on the Chargers already, so let's go to the Atlanta Falcons first.
All right, so the Atlanta Falcons are a team who have tremendous talent on the offensive side of the ball. Bijan Robinson, who was completely misused by Arthur Smith. Tyler Allgeier is a guy who I think they should look at possibly moving to get some capital, because he's proven he can be a good back in this league. Cordarrelle Patterson, a do-it-all guy. Drake London can play in this league. Kyle Pitts, for the love of God, just please bring in a coach that knows how to use a freaking tight end, because he was supposed to be a generational talent at tight end, but we barely ever seen him used. And Arthur Smith said he was a huge part of the offense, so if he was a huge part, that's a huge problem.
Like, what makes me so upset with the Falcons? You could have had Kyle Pitts, and you could have drafted another tight end. Hold on. like Darnell Washington. Darnell Washington is a phenomenal blocker. Kyle Pitts isn't going to block, but like he's a tight end that you can put out in the tight end position, or you can put him out as a receiver.
Well, and I think like that's why Jonnu Smith worked so well for him this year. Yeah, I mean, he had Jonnu put up good numbers as the number two tight end.
Anyway, I would have, if it was me, I would have drafted Darnell Washington still and like had Darnell Washington as the primary tight end, and then I would have picked Kyle Pitts at receiver.
Well, I mean,
because they weren't going to take receiver, and like, you know, your second was like, I don't even know who your wide receiver two was.
I don't think it really matters because Desmond Ridder or Taylor Heineke were the ones throwing the football. So, I mean,
they had bad quarterbacks.
Yeah.
So it feels like a Michael Penix or Bo Nix destination. And I feel like that with the Titans as well. I feel
that, like, or I like Jay. I really like Jaden Daniels in that offense.
That could be. I don't know. I'm stuck on Jaden Daniels and the Saints. I'm stuck on it. They need to move on from Derek Carr.
Yeah, but the Falcons pick before the Saints.
So. Oh, yeah, I know. But like, they can trade up. Like, trading up happens. Anyway, I'm just stuck on Jaden Daniels and the Saints. The Saints have not drafted a first-round quarterback since – is it Archie Manning or was it Aaron Brooks? It was one of those two.
I don't know.
Yeah, I think it might have been Archie Manning. They haven't drafted a first-round quarterback in so long. And, like, getting a Jaden Daniels who just came from LSU would be phenomenal for them.
So who's your coach in Atlanta, though?
Okay, so – same kind of thing. If it's not Ben Johnson, it's Todd Monken. They just, those are the top two for me, aside of from Eric Bieniemy. But
yeah.
I don't know. I feel like Eric Bieniemy is going to go to like the Chargers.
So this is the one.
I feel like he's going to the Chargers. If not, then Bill Belichick.
So this is the one that I've been waiting to throw Eric B's name in, because I think he can end up at any of these destinations. I said that before we started this segment, but I was not going to take the easy way out and bring him up for everyone, because I mean, it's just too easy to do, and it's just natural. Like, he's this guy that should have had a job. We've seen what he can do with offenses. But this is the team that would really excite me, because I think this team has the young, like, they have so many weapons on offense, so many guys that can go out and do things. Like you already touched on, Kyle Pitts can make plays from the tight end position or the receiver position. Drake London is a huge receiver. He's 6'4". I mean, Bijan Robinson can do everything. Hell, he can even decide to keep Tyler Allgeier and use Bijan Robinson in multiple ways that won't be wasted, like what Arthur Smith was doing. This is a team that if they bring him in and they let him go decide who he wants to run this offense playing quarterback, this offense could be scary.
Mm-hmm.
And they could very easily win that division next year because the division's up for grabs. So for me, this is the spot I want to see Eric be in. And if you're Atlanta, you need to be aggressive and you need to go make this move. He will be able to – he's the guy that can utilize the talent that you have there on offense that's been being wasted the last 3 years.
So here's kind of where I
– but if not, Ben Johnson would be a good fit too. But Eric B is – that's where I put him.
So this is a perfect kind of offense, I think, for Ben Johnson. You have multiple running backs established. You have Kyle Pitts. Eric, you know, Ben Johnson loves using the tight end. He does need a blocking tight end, but you got Jonnu. Like, you've got all of that covered right there. You can draft a wide receiver in this class, especially if you have a head coach who has a decision in that. You can beef up that offensive line. Like, it's a perfect kind of offensive fit for Ben Johnson. I think Todd Monken fits better with the Titans and that kind of, you know, the mentality. And then going back to the Saints, I really love Eric Bieniemy. For that, if you're not going to go defensive-minded head coach.
Mm-hmm.
Because you have an offense that needs a little bit more work than the other teams, I feel like. I mean, you got some good, solid pieces there, but, like, they just need a little bit more work. And, like, Eric Bieniemy, like, he can put in that work more than I think a Ben Johnson or a Todd Monken can. Mm-hmm. And so, like, you know, I love if Seattle decides to go offensive-minded, I love Eric Bieniemy for Seattle.
Yeah.
And then I love Bill Belichick for the Chargers because it's an established – like, these are your players, and they're phenomenal. They just need a good head coach to run things. Like, you don't have to do a whole lot of work. Just get in there and call your offense, and your offense is great enough to make it work.
So since you brought it to the Chargers, that's where we're going next.
Yeah.
I haven't used Bill Belichick on a team either. One – because it is so hard for me to see him anywhere else besides New England, and I'm trying to put together in my head what makes sense.
Yeah.
But what you're saying about the Chargers to me does make sense. There's tremendous talent there on the defense. They have young players. They have veteran players. And if you look at any Bill Belichick team, he always has a mix of both on his defense. Bill Belichick is a great defensive-minded head coach, and the Chargers desperately need defense. The talent's there. They just can't put it together. Joey Bosa, Khalil Mack, Derwin James, guys like that, I think he can pull out a whole new level out of those guys and really utilize them to their full advantage. And that's in a division where defense is really needed, especially when you're playing against the Chiefs twice a year and Patrick Mahomes. And I think he can bring the most out of them. Also, Austin Eckler is a guy that fits the mold of running backs that he's really liked to use over the years. You look at guys like James White and guys like that. They're not going to run for 1,000 yards, but they can run. They're going to come out of the backfield. They're going to catch a lot of passes, and they're going to get in the end zone. He's that type of guy that reminds me of that. Bill Belichick has also had great success early in his coaching career in New England. And even later on, I mean, Julian Edelman is really only a name because Brady made him a name. Julian Edelman truly was not a great receiver. He's a great guy going out there.
Quarterback in high school, or was it college?
College,
yeah.
Yeah, he's great at going out there and finding guys and pulling the most out of them at receiver. Keenan Allen, we don't know if he's going to be there or not next year.
I feel like he's going to do – if it's Bill Belichick, I feel like you're going to do everything you can to stay on that offense.
Exactly.
Maybe, but I'm
like,
wrong.
I don't think Quentin John – or I don't like Mike Williams there. Mike Williams can't stay healthy. He's never on the field. So I think he can help bring in guys that we would never really think of to fit in around Justin Herbert, that he can keep the ball moving. So it makes sense for him to be there. Other than Bill – maybe Eric B, this would be the only other team I would like to see him on is the Chargers, and that's because I think the offense does have talent with Justin Herbert, Keenan Allen if he's back. I think he can utilize Quentin Johnson when he was really underused this year. Austin Eckler, do it all back. I think he can elevate that offense to a whole new level, and I think he would love the opportunity to play the Chiefs twice a year and kind of show him, like, you guys needed me more than I needed you.
Yeah, I mean, this Chargers team is, like, it can be scary if you have better coaching. Mm-hmm. And, like, Bill Belichick, you know, he doesn't have that many years left. And so it's like, if you want to try to win the big one again, like, you know, this is the best team for it. Like, right. There's not any kind of, like, small rebuild or even a rebuild. Like, this is the team that's ready. Just moving a few pieces. Again, I agree with you, like, about Mike Williams.
I don't think we really look at teams very often and say they're a coach away from being right there. But if we were to ever look at a team and say that, I think the Chargers would be the team to say, like, they're a coach away. The talent's there.
I mean, you got an aging Khalil Mack who's still really good, but he doesn't have that many years left.
I mean, man put up, what, over 15 sacks this year, which is crazy.
Like, but you don't even hear about that. That's how crazy. Like, it's just a norm for Khalil Mack. And, like, you've got a strong, strong defense, and, like, it's ready to go. It just needs the best coach.
It just needs the coach.
And, exactly. You know, like, I agree with you and Mike Williams, but you can replace, like, the height of Mike Williams, like we were talking about before. Like, I want Detroit to draft this guy, but if the Chargers draft him, 6'7", 237, and Johnny Wilson from Florida State, like, you've already 6'7", 237, and Johnny Wilson from Florida State, you've already covered, you know, any height that Mike Williams is giving you right there. And, you know, hopefully he'll be able to stay healthier than what Mike Williams' career has kind of come to with the Chargers. But, you know, again, like we were saying before, I think Keenan Allen would stay if he had bring in a coach like Bill Belichick, especially, like, you know, the players that they know who Bill Belichick is and what he's going to do with this team. And so, you know, it's just they are a coach away, and I think they would win this division definitely this year, but even next year, even after the Chiefs have a chance to improve or, you know, whatever they're going to do in the offseason, they'd still be that much better.
See, I think you're stuck on the height thing with Mike Williams. I don't think you necessarily need to replace height with height. I think there's more to a receiver than that. I mean, we've seen him get the most out of guys like Manny Amendola. Didn't have the best career. He got to New England and he contributed to a Super Bowl run. Same with a guy like Chris Hogan. If Julian Edelman goes anywhere else, he's not the same player and he's not talked about the same way that he is now. So, I mean, he definitely knows how to go out there and find guys that either know how to run crisp routes and get open or can really break you off downfield and get open. I mean, he's going to find the guys that he needs to fit in there. But most importantly, I think he'll go out there and find what they need, and that is a safety blanket at tight end. And right now, the most popular thing I've been seeing in a mock draft is Brock Bowers to the Los Angeles Chargers at number 5. And if you know anything about Bill Belichick and the teams he's coached, Really, after that second stint they went on in Super Bowl runs, he really loved to use his tight ends. He did it with an absolute killer in Aaron Hernandez, and then he also used Rob Gronkowski, who's the greatest tight end of all time. Brock Bowers is another one of those guys who's a generational talent at tight end. You put him there, you better believe Bill Belichick is going to absolutely use everything and utilize him to the best of his ability and get the most out of that kid.
We definitely should have used the boo sound effect. We said absolute killer in Aaron Hernandez.
Dude, it was right there. I had to do it.
That's all good, though. But, like, I understand what you're saying with Mike Williams, but, like, that's truly what he does bring you. He's not the fastest, not the best route runner. Like, he gives you that go up and get it kind of effect.
And so I
that's
get that.
What I was throwing out with
well,
that.
Well, that's what I'm saying. So, like, they've never had that in a tight end. Bill
yeah,
Belichick
sure.
will find them that to tight
sure.
end. And if they take, like, if they get a guy like Brock Bowers at
oh,
five
yeah. –
yeah,
it's even more scarier if they go out and get a Brock Bowers.
Yeah,
I've also seen Brock Bowers to the Jets, which would be crazy because
that
Aaron
would be scary.
Aaron Rodgers loves throwing to his tight ends.
Well, him with and they got Garrett Wilson there, who's a stud. Breece Hall is a stud. I mean,
yeah, like
he only adds like the only problem with that offense is the quarterback.
Yeah.
So, I mean, the last job we have.
Aaron's good for one play these days, and, you know, he's
four.
Super old.
It was four.
Was it four?
It was like
I
four.
I swear it was like his first play.
Yeah, it wasn't the first play.
Okay. But still, he's like, he's good for half a drive.
So, the last job, you could argue, could be the hardest job because of the infamy and the fans and everything that comes with this organization, and that's the Las Vegas Raiders. We know their fans are diehard. They are some of the most loyal, craziest fans out there. And they expect success because they've had success. Granted, it's been a very long time since they've had success, which only makes them that much more hungry for it. We both talked earlier. I think we both think Antonio Pierce should get the shot there first at that job. And I think the line starts behind him. But if they don't go Antonio Pierce, the guy that makes the most sense to me, who embodies this organization and this team to a freaking T, from the personality to who he is to everything, is Harbaugh. I mean, we saw him do it with an organization, or not an organization, a college program in Michigan who hasn't had success and has been hungry for it for a long time, whose fans expect that and want that. It took him a few years, but he did it there. The Raiders expect the exact same thing, and I think his personality fits perfect for Vegas. I mean, Harbaugh in Vegas only makes too much sense in my mind. He's more of a personality than his brother is. There's no better place to be a personality than Las Vegas. It's the entertainment capital of the world, man. I mean, come on. But if there's a coach that I think Davis would give the time and the reins to, it would be Harbaugh, and let him build it how he wants it. Let him do everything he wants to there. I think there's enough pieces there that it wouldn't be too much of a rebuild. On the defensive side, you have a great player in Max Crosby, who I think is very underrated in this league and underappreciated. On the offensive side, you have guys like Jacoby Myers, who had a very solid season. Davante Adams, if they don't trade him, and Josh Jacobs, if he chooses to come back. He loves to run the ball. Obviously, and I think he would love to find a quarterback that can get the ball to Davante Adams at will. I don't know. Harbaugh to the Raiders, if it's not Antonio Pierce, only makes too much sense to me.
So that was an incredible pick because I wouldn't even think of John Harbaugh. So if it's not Antonio Pierce for me, I was thinking of Mike Vrabel, former player, absolute just hard nose, again, nose to the grindstone kind of coach. Like, you know, he's going to get the most out of his players. He just doesn't have the good team
right
now. And so, like, you know, you give him some of that those defensive pieces like a Max Crosby, is going to be a terror for the rest of the league. And like, you allow him to get his kind of linebackers in there and the rest of his D line that he wants to put around those guys. Like, it's going to be phenomenal. And like, we talk about the Raiders, like they have Tyree Wilson, who is kind of not taken off completely, but like he has the capabilities of doing that.
Yeah.
Especially when the league starts
just
like double teaming Max Crosby, like Tyree Wilson's going to start being able to put up stats. And so like, he was, you know, dealing with some health issues earlier on. And so that's why he was kind of falling a little bit, but I don't think he fell too much, but anyway. And so, like, you give him a full year where Max Crosby's getting double teamed or, you know, whatever the case might be, and he's starting to put up stats and become a terror as well. Like, it's going to be a phenomenal, phenomenal defense. And I think a coach like Mike Vrabel just makes sense there as well. So I do like that Jim Harbaugh, John Harbaugh. It's John. Which John so, Jim?
I don't know. I don't know.
One of the Michigan Harbaugh.
The college Jim.
It's Jim.
It's okay.
Yeah.
I felt like John was the Ravens, but
yeah, John is.
And I said Jim. I'm like, that don't make sense.
Yeah, Jim sorry. Is the personality that I think fits in Vegas. Now, granted, if this was like the old school Raiders, when like they prided themselves on being mean and nasty and like really punching you in the mouth, Vrabel makes sense. A guy like Mike McDonald from the Baltimore Ravens, their defensive coordinator, he also makes sense for a team like that. That's just not how I personally picture the Raiders anymore. So for that reason, that's why I gave it to Harbaugh. One last job I do want to bring up. It's not open, but you seem to full-heartedly believe it's going to be open if they don't win the Super Bowl this year as the Dallas Cowboys job. Now, let's say you're correct, because you're not the only person I've heard say that, and I could definitely see that happening. If the Cowboys come up short of the Super Bowl again, like we all expect them to, because, you know, they dim boys, and that's what they do. who takes over that job? I mean, we already talked about Bill Belichick earlier, and it seems like a very Jerry Jones move to go out there and make. I mean, he's done it in the past with a guy like Bill Parcells, who's proven to win Super Bowls. And Belichick's done it, obviously, at a higher level. So let's take Bill Belichick off the table there, because we've already discussed that and how that makes sense. Outside of Bill Belichick, who takes over that job from Mike McCarthy?
Eric Bieniemy. I love Eric Bieniemy so much for that spot as well. Like, you have Dak Prescott, who is putting up numbers even with the handicap of Mike McCarthy. You've got CeeDee Lamb, and, you know, you've got Brandon Cooks, who was doing some good stuff at different parts during the year.
Finally emerged towards the end of the season.
Yeah. Tony Pollard didn't have anywhere near the season you thought he would at the beginning of it all.
Hey, but he still ran for 1,000 yards.
Yeah, I mean, he's still good, but, like, you know.
Yeah, so, no, like, disappointed.
I think Eric Bieniemy could really, you know, take over, and he's just a way better play caller.
Well, and Ferguson has really emerged as a really solid tight end there as well.
Exactly. So, like, you've got the pieces there, and, like, this offense can just, like, you know, become way more. Now, if they want to go into a defensive-minded slate, they're definitely going to have to take, like, a – I don't know. I don't think they would take the risk on a Brian Flores. I don't think Jerry Jones would do that. And so, just to me, it's kind of like, who would he take?
So, for me, it's right there, and it's right in front of you. I think if McCarthy's gone and Belichick ends up somewhere else and they don't take him, I think Dan Quinn is the obvious hire there. Yeah. He's already in the organization. We've seen what he's done with that defense. You would think he would want to bring in his own offensive coordinator, obviously, because McCarthy's gone. We don't know who that'd be. We could speculate all day on that. And Eric Bieniemy, if for some reason if he does not get a head coaching job like he so deserves, he has said before he wants to learn from a defensive minded head coach. There would be no better defensive minded head coach, in my opinion, to go learn from than Dan Quinn. But if it's not Belichick and McCarthy's gone, it's got to be Dan Quinn. The players there, they love playing for him. Micah Parsons, most importantly, loves playing for him. And you want to keep superstars like him happy. So to me, it's kind of like right there. If McCarthy does go, I would think Dan Quinn's the second, if not the first guy up for him.
Yeah. I mean, that's true. Dan Quinn is perfect kind of, you know, he's not a risk. You know exactly what you're gonna get with a Dan Quinn. And so, you know, that would also be a very Jerry Jones doing if you can't get, like, who you wanted.
So, lastly, we've gone through our head coaching carousel. We put on our GM/owner caps. Last thing we really have to talk about to dive in is first playoffs start tomorrow, man. Super wild card weekend. Start with the first matchup. Let's go ahead and go with the Green Bay Packers versus the Dallas Cowboys. It's in Dallas. Green Bay, kind of surprising they got here. They kind of got off to a rough start to start the season. Jordan Love really has come on strong. The offenses seem to come on strong down the stretch of the season. The Cowboys are the Cowboys. They have their ups and downs. But if we know one thing for sure, it's that the Cowboys are going to falter in the playoffs. Who do you got in this matchup? Who do you like and why?
So I mean, it's at home for Dallas, unfortunately. And, like, they are undefeated
at home. They cheat!
I hate it so much. All right, they're undefeated at home. And, like, I love the Packers. I don't think it's going to be a blowout by any means. Uh-huh. I think Jordan Love is going to keep it close. That Green Bay offense is going to surprise. So I'm going to give a score. I may not do this for every single one, but I'm going to give a score for this one. I think it's going to end up being 31-21. Like, it'll be close, but just, you know, a 10-point difference is going to keep Green Bay at bay. And so I like Dallas in this game. Just, you know, besides that Detroit game, they have been pretty good at home. Maybe they've just been playing lesser opponents at home. Like, you know, there's different factors into that. But, like,
so to me,
they're undefeated at home for reasons.
Right. So the bigger thing to me than their home undefeated streak that I think we need to take into account is their record against teams that are above 500, which is not very good at all. I think they beat you guys, and we talked about it before we started recording on a call that I think was absolute BS. And I think Jerry Jones was out there, and I think his jaw was hurting after the game, if you catch my drift.
Yeah, I got you.
So, and like I said, man, the Cowboys always seem to disappoint when it matters the most. And I can see the Packers pulling off this upset, and I wouldn't be surprised about it. And I think it would only be fitting that the Packers caused Mike McCarthy to lose yet another job.
I would love it. It's just, you know, I don't know if the NFL is going to allow that to happen. Right.
So the games we have tomorrow, Saturday, the first playoff game we have is Browns, Texans. It's going to be in Houston. Shout out Jarrett. You know, the Cleveland Browns look, to me, in my opinion, look to be the only team in the AFC that can really push Lamar Jackson and the Baltimore Ravens. I think everybody else they've seemed to handle so far. They handled the 49ers fairly easily. They handled the Dolphins very easily.
They handled the Lions easily. It was like 38-6.
For whatever reason, the Browns, man, they're really cooking right now. And we've seen Joe Flacco get on this type of run before with the Baltimore Ravens, where he's made a run deep in the playoffs. The talent is there. The defense is there. They have the playmakers on offense. The running game is there, even without Nick Chubb. It's all depending on Joe Flacco. Unfortunately for the Texans, I don't think they have the necessary pieces that they need on defense right now to really, I think, beat these guys. I don't think it'll be a blowout, but I could see the Browns winning this game 34-20. I wouldn't mind at all if the Texans won this game. I would love to see C.J. Stroud get a playoff one and D'Amico Ryans. I mean, they've had a phenomenal season, but Cleveland just seems to be playing on a different level right now. They're hot, and I think they continue to ride this wave.
So there are, like, pros and cons with this game. Obviously, you have Stefanski, who's more experienced. You got D'Amico Ryans, who is first-year head coach. Done phenomenal, but it's first-year head coach. You got C.J. Stroud, first-year quarterback, no playoff experience. And I don't know if this is true, if it was, like, an exaggeration, but I thought I read somewhere, like, Joe Flacco has probably the most road playoff games in NFL history. I don't know if that's anywhere near close or if that was an exaggeration because he's just so old. But, like, he's been here before. Like, he knows exactly what he's doing. Browns do have the number one defense, I think, overall in the NFL. And so it's going to be a phenomenal matchup. It's going to be an incredible game. I do think it'll be close. The Browns do not play as well on the road, mm-hmm. and they're going to be in Houston. So I'm going like 27-21. I think it'll be close, and the Texans will have a chance, but that Browns defense is going to come clutch. So it'll be a good, fun game, but I think it's going to come down to a six-point heartbreak again for Jarrett.
So second game, Saturday night, is one that has a lot of people put on their conspiracy theory hats with the NFL scripted and everything happened just the way it needed to for Tyreek Hill to end up in Kansas City. First of all, I don't think that many people really give a shit that Tyreek Hill is going back to Kansas City to play the Queefs. I certainly don't. But the Dolphins are going to Kansas City to Arrowhead to play the Chiefs in a game that I feel bad for everybody that's going to be there, not because I think it's going to be a bad game, but because it's going to be so cold.
Negative 30 is like projected.
Negative 30
right now.
Wind chill. That's ridiculous. For everybody that goes, I hope you have a good time, but man, bundle up.
We're like 40 coats.
Yeah. Hey, bundle up and be safe. But man, let me tell you, those boys up there in Kansas City, they're built different. I went to a game last year with some family that are Kansas City Chiefs fans, And I thought it was cold then, and it wasn't even near as cold as it's going to be tomorrow. And they're like, oh, it's not that bad. It's a warm game. I was like, you had it in your freaking mind. They're built different. They'll be there before the Browns and Texans tip off or kick off tailgating. I mean, and they're built different down there. They'll be liquored up, so they'll feel warm. But for real, guys, bundle up, stay warm. I hope y'all have a good time. Diving into the game, though, Chiefs have not been playing good football as of late. Yeah, they got the better of the Dolphins earlier this year, but it was a close game. Man, I really don't know where to go with this because on one hand, it's like, man, there's no way that the Chiefs are going to lose in the first round of the Dolphins. But on the other hand, I can see the Dolphins absolutely cooking them, but man, it's cold. I don't know if these boys from Miami want to play in the cold weather. Add in the fact that Jalen Waddle is questionable. Raheem Mostert is questionable for this game. And give me 1 second. I could tell you somebody else that's out that's of note for them.
Yeah, I think it's someone else of prominence for them.
Xavien Howard, yeah, their second best corner is out. Yeah. So these things don't help your cause. I think it's going to be a close game. I think you could flip a coin, call it in the air, and that's how you could determine the winner. Me personally, I hope the Dolphins win because if you've listened to this show or you know me, you know how I feel about the Chiefs. I don't want to see Kermit the Frog or that big fat fucker that coaches them move on and even have another shot at another Super Bowl. I don't want to see it. I'm tired of seeing their commercials. I'm tired of seeing Taylor Swift on my television. I'm tired of hearing about that queer Kelsey. I'm sick of it. I'm tired of all of it. I want them to go away. I want them to fade off into obscurity. And for that reason, I'm picking the Dolphins, but I wouldn't be surprised if the Chiefs won.
I can't believe you hate him, my man Andy. Like, I get it. I get the Chiefs hate. I hate him too. But, like, come on, man.
Dude, it's
man,
so disgusting.
My man Andy Reid is.
It's so disgusting how much he embraces being so fat. He's like, oh, let me eat your nuggets and your burger and your fries. Oh, like, dude, why don't you go eat a fucking salad? Like, come on.
I'm sure he does. Anyways.
No, he doesn't look at him.
He doesn't fit the camera, all right?
He doesn't fit the camera.
All right. So, the Dolphins coming in injured. They don't play well in the cold at all. The Chiefs. They play better in the cold than the Dolphins do. And so, like, it's going to be an ugly game for sure. And I think it's going to end up being, like, a 14-10 game. Like, it's not going to be a phenomenal game to watch at all. Maybe if you love low-scoring games, maybe.
So the
thing that, I'm not betting against Mahomes in the playoffs because, again, I know who the NFL is. So I'm going 14-10 Chiefs.
So the thing the Dolphins do have this time that they did not have last time they played the Chiefs is Jalen Ramsey. And Jalen Ramsey has been playing great football since he's been back. And if we know one thing, we know one thing's for sure. There's only about one guy on that team that can catch the football right now on a consistent basis, and that's probably Rashee Rice. And if you're going to tell me Rashee Rice could cook Jalen Ramsey, I'm going to call you a crackhead. I think Jalen Ramsey puts down the clamps, and then you really just – if you double-team Kelsey and just make sure he's not open, I wouldn't be worried about anybody else catching the football and beating you that game.
Now, here's the point. Where did Jalen Ramsey? He went to Florida State, right? Like he was a Florida State offer. We don't know how he plays necessarily in the cold in like negative 30. He went to Florida State, Florida, Jacksonville, Florida. He's in Miami now. He was in Los Angeles. Like we don't know how he plays in the cold. Like he is good and he's going to shut down Rashee Rice. Like
He's the best corner in the league.
I'm just saying like, we don't know how he's going to play in the cold. And so he may not be a game deciding factor.
You're not wrong. The Miami boys don't play in cold weather like this, but the Chiefs ain't playing a negative 30 weather on a regular basis.
You're right.
But like, nobody, I don't care who you are or how you deal with cold. This is a whole different type of cold. And this is an X factor for everybody in this game.
You're not wrong. Like, you know, there's no telling how this is going to happen.
Man, you know what's going to suck, though.
They're used to playing in colder weathers.
Man, you know what's going to suck,
though. The Dolphins are.
If I were the Kansas City Chiefs, I would definitely lean on Isaiah Pacheco because if you've ever played football in a cold weather game, you know that when you get hit or you feel anything, it's 20 times worse. Isaiah Pacheco runs angry, and if he just runs through these guys, they're going to feel it. They're not going to want to keep hitting him. So let's move on to Sunday, another very cold weather game. This team is actually asking their fans to please come out and help shovel snow so we can play our game on Sunday. The Buffalo Bills versus the Pittsburgh Steelers. I think it's a miracle the Steelers have gotten to the playoffs. Obviously, Mike Tomlin is a great head coach. He's done a phenomenal job again. he doesn't lose, or he doesn't have losing seasons. Let me rephrase that. Their offense surprisingly has gotten better since they fired their offensive coordinator, which very rarely happens. But that being said, the Bills have won 5 straight games. They're playing good football. The snow is going to come into factor. Obviously, it won't be as big of a factor to Pittsburgh as it does a team like Miami. Pittsburgh is on the East Coast. They're used to cold.
Yeah.
The snow, it's going to be an ugly game. It's going to be a rough game, I think. And TJ Watt's not playing. I think Buffalo has more guys that are more physical, that are more better dogs, and they're going to go out there and they're going to win an ugly game.
A good season by the Steelers, but it's definitely going to come to an end here. A lot of people are projecting a blowout, and it may very well be, but I'm going to say it's going to verge on more like 34-20, and I think the Bills put it away near the very end, like one of their last drives.
See, I don't think they score that much because of the snow the way it is right now. I could see it being like, 17-9, something crazy like that. I think it's a real low-scoring game.
It could be, and it kind of depends on how they're going to handle if they're going to keep fumbling the ball. Kind of, it could either be a 34-20 game, and the snow is not like a complete factor for these two teams because New York gets a lot of snow. You know, Pittsburgh gets a lot of snow. Like, maybe both these teams are used to it, and they're just, you know, they're fine with it. Or it's going to be an ugly game with, like, 6-7 turnovers total, and it's going to be a 17-9 game. So
I think it's going to – well, when I say ugly, I think – even if you're used to the snow, I'm not saying the cold is going to make a difference, but running in snow is a lot harder than running turf in general. It's going to slow players up, and it's not going to be the game you're used to by any means. But I will say you can never count out Mike Tomlin or his teams. They're scrappy. Tomlin is a hell of a coach, one of the most underappreciated coaches in the league. And if anybody could find a way to pull this off, it would be him.
Yeah. No matter if it's an ugly game or if it is like, you know, a normal game of sorts, like, it's not going to be a blowout. Like, they're going to be competitive. Mike Tomlin's not going to let them just bow out and, you know, end their season getting embarrassed. You know, it's not going to be like a complete blowout. So I do still have the Bills winning it, regardless of whether it's ugly or it's, you know, normal.
Right.
But yeah. So I think they'll put it away late score wise, but
we already touched on the Cowboys Packers matchup. So it brings us to a game that really means a lot to my partner here, Colton. We have the Detroit Lions finally getting to host a home playoff game for the first time in our lifetime.
Yeah.
And they're hosting none other than Matthew Stafford and the Los Angeles Rams.
My guy.
Colton, I know a lot of emotions for you going into this game, so I'm going to let you take it away and lead us on this one. Talk us through what you're going through as a fan.
So at first, I'm like, I was regretting this matchup because it was kind of like, it's kind of headed that way. I'm like, all right, well, we know the NFL script. So it was kind of just headed toward that a little bit. So I've had quite a little bit of time to kind of catch my emotions on it. But now I'm at the point, we're a couple days away from it. I'm just like, all right, well, Stafford's public enemy number one now. So there's some fans that are going to boo him and like they want to ban his jersey from this game. But then there's other fans that are like, no matter the outcome, it's a win for Detroit because it's either Stafford moving on or if it's the Lions. I'm like, nah, it's loser.
No, that's a fucking loser mentality right there.
Anyway, so it's like, I'm very much in the middle. Like, I love Staff, but like, you're public enemy number one. So, you know, anyway, super, super grateful to get to experience the first home playoff game, I think, in Ford Field's history. I think the last time there was a playoff game in Detroit, it wasn't Ford Field. I could be wrong. I don't know the history of Ford Field.
Right.
I hate Ford, so I don't care. But yeah, so just in my lifetime, for sure, regardless, like, it's just an incredible experience. Both defenses are not the greatest. The Rams might be a little bit better defensively, but their secondary is not the greatest at all.
Well, I don't know if you could say the Rams are better defensively. They just have
the best
defensive player in this game in Aaron Donald.
They have Aaron Donald, but like other than that, I think they had Joe Johnson again.
I think you guys have more playmakers on defense. Branch has had a phenomenal rookie season.
For sure.
Campbell has played really well as a linebacker, which, you know, since we're talking about the Detroit Lions, go on, put this on the record. Man, I owe you an apology. I really question a lot of those draft picks. I mean, you go back and listen to the episode and hear what I had to say, but man, was I wrong, and do I have yolk all over my face? Laporta, stud, Gibbs, stud, Campbell has played very good football. I did agree with you on Branch. I thought Branch would be great, and he has been. So, you know, my hat's off to that team. They definitely know a lot more about drafting than I thought they did.
Like, even going further, like, Colby Sorsdahl was a guard we played that is like flexibility move out to tackle. He's been great for depth because we've had injuries on that O-line. Broderick Martin has had some times where he's come in and, you know, played good. And so, like, you just have full-on draft classes absolutely been phenomenal for us. It's like it's going to be – I think it's going to be like a little bit of a high-scoring affair. Our defense is going to come up through a little bit in spots, but I'm going 34-27. You know, it might be even more high-scoring than that. I've gone from like 41-35 down to 34-27, and so it's going to be very high-scoring, but Detroit plays better at home, and we are used to getting into the blowouts. Like, we beat the Chargers 41-38, you know, so it's like it's going to be a phenomenal game. I think it's going to be a shootout, and it's like which defense can get that 1 to 2 stops kind of a game.
So I'm going back and forth on this one over here because I can see it playing out a couple of different ways. I did say I think that you guys have more playmakers on defense from Branch and Campbell, who we've already mentioned. You have C.J. Gardner-Johnson, who's got experience in the playoffs, who I'm thinking is going to try to get these boys right and get them hyped up for this game because he understands how important it is. And then Aiden Hutchinson, who's an absolute stud on that defensive line. That being said, a lot of those guys on that defensive side are very young guys. And for y'all having more pieces on defense, as weird as it sounds, I think the Rams have more pieces on offense.
They do.
Puka Nacua has had the best rookie. He's been the best rookie receiver we've ever seen from a statistical standpoint, point blank period. Nobody's ever caught as many passes or for as many yards as he has. It's been phenomenal. We all know what Cooper Kupp can do. Obviously, he's been up and down this year. He's been inconsistent. But he is still Cooper Kupp, and you do still have to account for that. Matthew Stafford can sling that ball. Obviously, he's got that gunslinger mentality. He's like Brett Favre. He can either scorch you for 6 touchdowns or he can lose his team the game with 4 interceptions.
Yeah.
So a lot of it depends on which Matthew Stafford shows up. And then Kyren Williams, I think, is going to be the X factor because he is such a good do-it-all running back and he's had such a good season. But you guys, you know, Jared Goff is the thing that scares me most going into this game. Because it seems like in big games this year, Goff has had a tendency to turn the ball over in really bad spots where you need him to step up. He's tend to fade away. I think if you can find a way to neutralize Aaron Donald to the best of your ability, which is obviously easier said than done, and you can lean on that running game, that plays heavily in your favor. I think Detroit needs to try to keep the ball in their hands as much as possible and keep the ball out of the Rams' hands and force them to stay on the field as long as possible on playing defense. Obviously, that's always a game plan when you go into a game. But lean on that running game, wear them down, make them tired. I think that makes it better for you when down the stretch. I don't think they have anybody that can cover Amon-Ra St. Brown. He's an absolute beast of a receiver. But like I said, it scares me that Jared Goff is the one that has to get him the ball. So I would, if I'm Dan Campbell, I lean on it and I run him into the ground until they – into the game, and then you give St. Brown his chance to make a big explosive play. This one is really close for me to call. I can see the Rams winning this one really close. I can also see the Lions winning this really close. For your sake, I hope the Lions win. I would love to see the Lions win, but I wouldn't be surprised if the Rams won. I mean, it's going to be a good game. And there's going to be a lot of emotions for fans like you out there when Matthew Stafford comes back into the Ford Field for the first time, right, since he's been traded.
Yeah, because we're playing him next year in Detroit as well during the regular season. But, yeah, this is the first time that he's come back. So I do agree that, like, we need to figure out how to double-team AD, move him out of the way, and pick up that run game. Because nobody else on that defense is going to stop the run game if we get AD out of the way.
Right.
And so it's going to be a lot of, like, hopefully some double-teaming him, kind of, you know, pulling guys, trying to get him off the, you know, off the line. And so it's going to be curious to kind of see how we do. Definitely agree we need to run the clock completely off and, you know, make it like when they had the Vikings the last couple of time, like that first drive, the first time we played the Vikings, we took off the entire first half of the first quarter before the Vikings even got the ball. That was like exactly what we need in that moment. That's what we need on Sunday night.
And the biggest X factor I think y'all have coming into this game is y'all's coach. Nobody knows what Dan Campbell's going to do because I don't think Dan Campbell knows what he's going to do until Dan Campbell does it.
Exactly.
And that's been a good thing so far for y'all. I mean, he's the type of guy – it'll be fourth down inside his own 20 and he'll go for it. That aggressive,
or he'll punt fake it, like, yes, where it's like lower yeah, percentage, like it's crazy.
And that aggressiveness has paid off very well for y'all, and I can see that coming in and factoring in really huge for y'all again this game. He's a very aggressive head coach. I think between him and CJ Gardner-Johnson, who went on a playoff run last year, knows what it takes. I think between those two guys, they get this team up and they rile them up to play, and they're going to have to come correct, because obviously there's still enough guys on the Rams team who have that Super Bowl experience, who also know what it takes to make this push down the home stretch.
I will say Detroit has the number one run defense in the league. Mm-hmm. And so hopefully we're able to shut down Kyren Williams from running the ball. But I do think I agree with the X factor part. If he can catch the ball and like have great receiving yards, he could definitely be a difference maker.
That's what makes him so scary, is he can do it all.
In the same sense, like, in two games against the Vikings, we allowed Nick Mullins to throw for 811 yards. Like, yeah, he threw six picks, but he threw for 811 yards in two games.
Yeah,
like, that's ridiculous.
But, I mean, he had
CeeDee Lamb went off for 232 yards against us in that game. So, it's like, the secondary scares me, and it's very much the weakness. So, like, it doesn't even matter, really, about Kyren if you're allowing Cooper Kupp or, you know, Puka Nacua to go off for 200 each.
And like, it's scary because they both run crisp routes and find ways to get open.
And so, it's like, you have to be – you have to either get home when you're on defense. There's going to be a lot of pass rush.
Oh, yeah.
You have to get home on those sacks, or you have to keep them off the field completely.
Yeah, Aiden Hutchinson is going to have to win his matchups every time.
And that's why I'm so upset about, like, James Houston not being in this game. He's not going to be playing in this game on Sunday night. You know, like, he hasn't played since week two, though, so I don't know how much of a factor he would have been anyway. But, and so hopefully we'll be able to get Chauncey on some blitzes as well, because, like, hopefully he's, like, you know, he hasn't played a whole lot. He played on last Sunday. So if we can get him in some sack situations, or maybe keep him in coverage and have number six, who had two sacks against the Vikings in the division-winning game, you know, he had a couple sacks in that game. So maybe if he's able to come on a free run, Stafford's not able to see it, and, you know, we get home on a couple, knock him out. So, you know, it's hopefully we run clock and, you know, just get out of there. Like, who cares about stats? Just win the game.
Right. Stats don't matter in the playoffs. Exactly. Just survive in advance.
But, yeah, hopefully Detroit wins. I just see a shootout happening.
So, final playoff game, Monday night. We have Tampa Bay. Oh, no. The Eagles are coming to Tampa. That's right. Your boy Baker Mayfield, you know, I was down on him coming into the season. Another thing you were right about, I mean, he found a way to bounce back. He played good football this year. He didn't turn the ball over, which has been his biggest downfall in seasons past. He held onto the ball. He made good plays. The team has really rallied around Todd Bowles and what he's doing there. Mike Evans had a phenomenal year. Chris Godwin's having a good year. Rashad White's playing really good football right now. And unfortunately for the Philadelphia Eagles, they are playing really bad football. They're really banged up. A.J. Brown's hurt. Jalen Hurts hasn't thrown the ball since Sunday. He broke his finger in the last game they played. And even before that, he wasn't playing great football. I mean, going into this game right now, your head says to say the Eagles should win because they have more talent. But right now, I'm saying the Buccaneers are going to win this game. They're healthier, and they're playing better football down this stretch of the season right now.
Yeah. So you have an entire team – I don't know about the entire team, but you have a lot of players who are completely out on Nick Sirianni, who is their head coach. And, like, you can't win games when that happens. Like, I don't know when it happened, because they were 10-1 at one point. But, like, it happened at some point toward the end of the season where now they've now been 1-5. And it's like, you know, you're not going to win games, especially in the playoffs, when it's this case. But also, we do have a team in Tampa who, I mean, they have been here because they were with Tom Brady, but they haven't been here with this exact kind of team, you know? And, like, I think Baker's going to get out there. He's going to shake and bake. And I do have the Buccaneers winning this game.
If Baker takes care of the ball, they win.
Yeah. It's going to be interesting to kind of see how it does play out. I do think it's going to be pretty competitive, but also think the Bucs are going to be, you know, fighting to get revenge, but also fighting to get that win and show, like, you know, they did win the division, but their entire division is trash. And it's like they're more than just the winners of a trash division. They have a lot to prove in that aspect.
I think you're right. And I think they're playing better football down the stretch. And this time of year, it matters most who's hot right now.
Yeah.
That being said, the Eagles have the pass rushers that can get home and disrupt Baker and cause a lot of turnovers and wreak havoc.
Like, that's what's so weird about this game.
It's just, are they going to wake up and do it?
Yeah.
But I am glad you brought up Nick Sirianni, because I did see a thing today that said if they lose early in the playoffs, there is a very real chance that he's fired and out as a head coach, which is weird because they just were in the Super Bowl last year. If that by some chance happens, let's play theoretical like we were with the Cowboys a minute ago. If he's gone, who's in? Because talent, they have loads and loads and loads of talent.
Mm-hmm.
Who comes in? Who takes over for that team? Who can get them over that hump?
I think for them, you would bring in a defensive-minded head coach that the players are going to be in love with, because I think that's one of the issues with Nick Sirianni is like the players are just out on what he is and what he wants to bring. And so I would throw out a Nick Flores. I think the passionate
Brian Flores.
Fan, what did I say?
Nick.
Oh yeah. Brian Flores. I'm sorry. Brian Flores. I think the passionate fan base that is Philadelphia would absolutely just fall in love with him. And you're going to have players fall in line for him too. And like, you know, I think it'd be a perfect fit for Philadelphia, especially getting a defensive minded coach with how good that defense should be and like how much talent they're going to have. Like, you know, you can get the players to buy into a Brian Flores or a Mike Vrabel or.
So let me tell you why Nick Sirianni might lose his job if they lose early.
Okay.
It's because a guy by the name of Bill Belichick has become available as a head coach. Anybody can manage this many egos, this much talent, who is a defensive-minded head coach, who only thing he wants right now is to prove he can win a Super Bowl without one Tom Brady.
Mm-hmm.
That is Bill Belichick. This is a team that is in win-now mode. They are not building for 7 years down the road. They are building for the next 2 to 3 seasons because that is their window before they lose guys inevitably because you cannot pay everybody. It's just impossible. If Sirianni's gone, that's the team, not the Chargers, where Bill Belichick is like, yep, I'm going there. Because the talent's there. From veterans, you talk about a great mix of veterans and young talent with guys like Brandon Graham, Fletcher Cox, Hassan Reddick. And then you mix in guys like Jalen Davis, Nolan Smith, Jalen Carter, Darius Slay, guys like that. I mean, that's scary. And I think he can help. And Jalen Hurts fits me as the type of guy that would fit well under Belichick. You know, wants to work, wants to win, wants to be great.
Yeah. I do like that pick. If, you know, again, another established team, like we're talking about with the Chargers, that they're, like you say, are win now mode, would definitely be absolutely perfect for Bill Belichick to go to.
Yeah. Well, we talked about the playoffs. We've talked about the coaching craziness. We touched on college football a little bit. We've gone a really long time on this one. First episode back in like 4 or 5 months. Hoping to keep this going more consistently. You guys make sure you stream us, share us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, all that stuff. You can find us on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, and wherever else you get your podcast. Thank you guys for tuning in, and we're glad to be back. See you next time.